also Members compliments of the newspaper. I'm carrying a message from our commissioners as well. We are a full complement of 12 commissioners. And today we are joined by one of our newbies, our youngest, so we can imagine the energy there. Is Commissioner Mleko here? She's one of our new commissioners. Mleko. Ntabise Mleko. She will introduce I'll give her an opportunity for her to the committee to just hear as their voice. So all of our commissioners, Mama Mandela, have joined us, all of them. We are now a full complement of 12 commissioners, and we have started already our first session together. This quarter that we will be reporting the next one. So we are on full steam, ramping up our work, and I'm just passing the compliments from the entire team.
What's the ratio?
The ratio, we have now 4 men, and 8 of them are women.
Congratulations on keeping up.
Yes, the only, maybe just on that, the only challenge will be that our commissioners are based in, kind of concentrated in Gauteng. About 5 of the commissioners are in Gauteng. We have 3 commissioners from the Eastern Cape. We don't have commissioners in KZN, Northern Cape, Free State, and Limpopo, which will kind of have a financial implications on our budgeting as well. It will always have also have an impact on our part-time, the use of the part-time commissioners, because now we have to augment where we don't have full-time commissioners. So an anomaly can exist that you have 3 commissioners in Eastern Cape who are all full-time commissioners. And then you have the rest of part-time commissioners who will be concentrated in Gauteng. And we have to make use of our commissioners around the provinces for our provincial oversight work. But we will balance it. We will balance it, we will try and balance it. So we have already deployed all the commissioners to their provinces, but I must say that it's going to be a challenge balancing our budget and the work that we all have to do. But it's a balancing act, and we will also indicate that our budget has been reduced by 2 million, and we don't know, because of the cost containment, 2 million. I know that Human Rights Commission, they've taken 4 million. So it's we don't know whether we're paying for higher education or what, but we are in a fix, in a budgetary fix. We have tried all the lobbying, trying to lobby people on the aeroplanes or do you know, trying to sleep in where a hotel where a person is sleeping, just to say, you know, remember the gender commission, but it has not been working. So we're stating it as a part of the risk that we going to explain. So one of them is that our commissioners are not well represented in the provinces, but we are going to do the balancing act that we need to do. And two, our budget has been reduced by 2 million, and that is putting more pressure on us. And then on 3, I just wanted to state that we are reducing our personnel. So we're giving there are positions that we have been unable to, for some time now to fill them in because of our financial constraint. So it means that most of our employees will have an extra burden. We're distributing the work kind of with the employees that we have. And we are trying also to do some savings here and there. But I know that with the full complement of commissioners, the savings are going to be hard to come by, but we're going to work hard to do that without compromising our mandate. We will be, I'm having,
sorry, before you go on, was it explained to you, CBE, why that amount was covered?
Chair, yes, indeed, the reduction in budget has been implemented public sector wide. The budget affected budget for the financial year beginning April 2018, the next financial year. Our current budget is still intact. We're still operating on a 78 million pound baseline. However, through the allocations for the new financial year, the project had increased budget, was taken down. So the effect would be that our budget between the two financial years will remain the same. There's no effective increase, but it has been applied and announced. Reasons have been given to say that because of the fiscal position, there are going to be sacrifices and departments, all public entities were subjected to a master cut.
Driven by the National Assembly.
No, it's not the same.
National Assembly is not, the Speaker's office is not giving us any assurances whether they have gone through the constitutional, the constitutionality of the amalgamation, whether they have looked, what they have just done is to say established teams, and the Gender Commission has to go in that committee and agree to be amalgamated. And we have said as a Gender Commission, we are not, we first want to establish whether the National Assembly has gone through the constitutional constitutionality of this, and whether the National Assembly itself has actually looked at the different streams of the committee and is actually convinced that it is time to amalgamate the chaplains. Because the terms are not the same, the mandates are not the same, our financials are not the same. And when you have a committee that is looking at your powers, then it's a red flag. So the National Assembly, through the Speaker's office, has to give us the kind of indicators whether this is constitutional or not. And we have said, we have done, Mama Mela, our own constitutional research on the issue. And but we have said that we will report to you as transparent as possible, that we, in the advent that this thing is pushed, as it is pushed now, the Gender Commission will have to ask the Constitutional Court to clarify as to what to do. But now, if the National Assembly is the one that is actually insisting and running with this without giving us the clarities on the Constitution, the constitutionality of what is happening, then we are kind of caught up in between where we account and who we take to court in terms of clarifying it. So we are just raising it as a red flag. It's just before we do our, I know that I've raised so many challenges, but I needed to be transparent. This is what even in our plenary we have reported.
Robinson. Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, I'm interested and heartened to hear what you say, and also that you plan to take this on and not just get to lie down meekly to be slaughtered. We have been talking amongst ourselves, and I'm just speaking for myself now, but there's general consensus that we need to study, we need to check out these things. I personally don't know what committee this is that's deciding on it. So I'm going to go back and question, and perhaps on behalf of all of us, and I speak for myself, but I think I've got support, that we who serve on this committee and know most about you should be involved. So you certainly will have my backing, and I'll see which others we can get to make this a committee effort, but that's for the committee to decide, but I personally will take it up.
Thanks, Shepherdson, and thanks, Chair, for the remarks on behalf of the CGA. Chair, I'm not quite sure how can we then take the discussion forward, because it has been in front of us as the committee for quite some time. And I was thinking that from Parliament side, there will be one or two members from our portfolio committee serving in their task team, because one of their chapter 9 institutions is accounting directly to us, so that we can be able to give an informed, you know, updates in terms of the governance and finances of our the institutions that are accounting to us. But it's unfortunate because, you know, sometimes we'll be embarrassed about the workings of these institutions. You know, the process is running parallel to our committee, unfortunately. And if we don't take any decision to come to call the office of the deputy speaker to our portfolio committee, then it's something else, because we'll meet, you know, the process on the other side. So it's so unfortunate, Chair, because right from the beginning, the committee was not, you know, supporting the view, because what we were saying is that Karaasmalu's report is outdated, and we can use it as a benchmark now to amalgamate the Chapter 9 institution. So I am not quite sure, Chair, what we should do. I think the last time we've met with the deputy speaker, I'm not quite sure it was at the level of the multi-party women's caucus or at the level of the portfolio committee. I'm not quite sure. And if it was at that level or even in the portfolio committee. Yeah, but to all of us, we are not convinced about the process. Yeah, and yeah, it's unfortunate because I'm not quite sure what do we want to achieve at the end of the day after amalgamating this. Because if it's one of the cost-cutting measures, what will be the impact? Because we're still going to retain all the employees that we have across the board. So I'm not quite sure, Chair, what is the intention. So I'm not sure about the way forward, Chair. I think the meeting will discuss it going forward. I'm not quite sure. I'm just frustrated. And secondly, Chair, I heard the Chair saying they want to reduce their personnel. If I heard you correctly, but I'm subject to correction. So I'm asking myself, how are you going to reduce this personnel within your institution as part of cost-cutting measures? And on the issue of just a brief comment on the commissioners, I think it's our responsibility, because when we employ, when we shortlist and do the interviews and recommend at the end of the day, it's the responsibility of Parliament. So we should not hold CGE accountable to say they're employing people within, you know, one province. Most of the commissioners are residing within one province, being your Gauteng and your Eastern Cape. It's our responsibility. We have to look at our geographical spread. It's Mpumalanga represented, it's Limpopo represented. You know, if it's one of our, if we want to cut costs, it should be our responsibility as members of Parliament to look beyond that, because our country is too vast. So, and we've got people within those provinces who can take the responsibility of being commissioners. So it's our overseeing of lack of, you know, oversight as members of Parliament. But I think going forward, these are the things that we have to highlight. Chair, thanks.
We wanted to the CGE is to meet with portfolio committee
the highlight of what they thought should assist us so that we can be able to make those discussions with the city speaker. What level do they stop their level of thinking to them? What can assist us to discuss this issue with the city speaker? Because for us, we are not afraid of what the Women's Commission would do. Because this thing has been taking, this report has been, we're told that this report has been 10 years. You know, it's never been even taken to the House for the House to debate about it. Now it's just coming up to go down. So we even don't have any information, especially those protocol committees that are working together with this Chapter 9 institution. Thank you.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much. I think I would agree with the previous speakers. I think I was just reading an article now which indicated that the Deputy Speaker had said that he was still in a consultation process and that he had in fact was circulating surveys amongst Members of Parliament to indicate whether they are in agreement with this Chapter 9 amalgamation. Now, firstly, I have not received one of these surveys, but it's a recent article. It's actually from the end of last year. He was interviewed about this process. So I think, in essence, I think we will have to, as a matter of urgency, schedule a meeting with the Deputy Speaker. I think firstly because there are parallel processes which are not including us as a committee. But secondly also, I see the motivation here is that amalgamation should happen because the Commission for Gender Equality also works with human rights issues. But the issue that they are working on is a specialized area. It deals with women, it deals with empowerment, gender equality. So it seems from what I'm reading here that even the Deputy Speaker is not 100% sure whether he should proceed with this process or what the feelings of members are. I would also be interested to know what the surveys that he said to have been doing amongst members of Parliament revealed. But I think if we can look at our program, we haven't adopted a program for the year yet. If we can urgently schedule a meeting with the Deputy Speaker and make it very clear that we as various political parties do not support the move that he is busy with. Another issue is that they are saying that the reason for amalgamation would be because of resources. But I mean, the SCG is already underfunded and I don't think that bringing it under the body of the Human Rights Commission, that it would actually assist you know, the cause. I think it will actually leave you with less funds to execute what you are supposed to do. So if we can appeal to you, Chairperson, as our representative, to schedule an urgent meeting, if we can move some of the other meetings to later, that we can meet with them as soon as possible. Thank you.
Human rights.
What's the view of other Chapter 9 institutions, your CRLC or human rights, what are the views, because surely you share your views at that level of your chairperson's group of exco.
Now, human rights is the receiving commission and it
it might feel at the end because of the pressure. At first, we were all agreeing, but there's so much pressure and giving. So what the parliament is doing, we all agreed. We will give you the first discussion. We all agreed this is not going to work. It's not going to work. And then they target a different chapter 9. And then there was a time when we were called by different ministers, the cluster of ministers who called the chapter 9s, and they were trying to give us a line of march. And then that meeting stepped down again. And even recently, yesterday, the chapter 9s do not agree. But there is so much pressure for us to make a decision. As a general commission, we have decided the public protector is not affected at all. Human Rights Commission is not going to be, it will be affected because it has to receive all of us, CRL, the Gender Commission, and PEMSA. We all have to get in under the Human Rights Commission. And the Human Rights Commission at that time was enthusiastic, but I know now with the new commission, they also feel there's so much to do. They won't know how to handle all this chapter 9. CRL also has a stand, they don't want to be amalgamated. We don't want the amalgamation, but we are pressured by different, the pressure is coming from all sides for the amalgamation to happen. And the way the speed is at it, we were even feeling that maybe because they have not appointed the chairperson of the Gender Commission for 9 months, we felt probably that is the time that we're going to be closed down. Because some of the ministers, they have the audacity to tell us that we are shutting down the Gender Commission. So, our ministers that we work with in the space of women, so there are issues even amongst us that the Gender Commission's mandate is given to different ministries and all that. But we've had a session with the minister, an informal session with the women's ministry, just to explain the Gender Commission, because the Gender Commission has
be specific. If you speak about the Minister of Justice, just be mentioned, be specific. If it's women, then be specific, the minister responsible for women.
We've had a session in the beginning, in the early times of the amalgamation. There was Commissioner, there was Minister Mutambi, there was Minister Jeff. You remember the first discussion with the CEO. I'm trying to get a concurrence here. We've had JJ and everyone, the different ministers, in the early discussions of this amalgamation. And then, informally, we've had a session with the women's ministry. And formally, we've had a discussion on, they were requesting the presidency to kind of clarify what is the role of the women's ministry vis-a-vis the CGE. And it's always a point of conflict of whether the women's ministry is doing the same work as the Gender Commission. And I think in our informal session with the women's ministry, after your encouragement, we are doing everything to work with the women's ministry. And we came to the conclusion that we need to talk even more elaborately about the role of the Gender Commission, because the Gender Commission is a chapter 9. It's not a department like the women's ministry. But what we have seen is the mixing up of mandates. When the women's ministry was formed, they gave them, they didn't think, they just gave them the women, the Gender Commission's mandate. But now they don't have the powers of the chapter 9. So I think in their quick fix amalgamation, they are not thinking that the Gender Commission will peddle and say that this is unconstitutional. So I must say that the speed of this has actually mystified what they are trying to do. And it's actually diluting the discussion itself. That is why as a Gender Commission, we have to raise it with you. We will give you the minutes, we will give you our different submissions, we're going to give you the work streams as they happen now, because at the moment they are developing the terms of reference. that where we are now. So we'll give it to you, Chair, so that you can have, when you meet and ask the questions, you will have relevant information on. We have worked a lot on this one. And yeah. Just in the interest of time, Honourable Members, we'll give you all the information to the Chair. Just as a last, maybe the, on our budgeting, we have already, Honourable, like, done what we have downgraded some of our jobs in the Gender Commission. So we had an HOD for HR. Because we don't have money for the HOD, we have reworked the job description to have a manager instead of the HOD. Because we don't have money. The office of the chairperson is supposed to get a manager. We don't have a manager. The office of the chair works with a PH through manager. So there's two paid PAs. But these two PAs, they play office manager for the chairperson. The commissioners, all 12 of the commissioners, they are sharing one PA. One of the two PAs that I have. So the commissioners, 12 of them, they have one PA. And myself, I'm part of the PA of the of the commissioners. So there are those areas that we need, but we have decided, because we don't have a budget, is to divide the work and kind of refine the job description of the different people, just to cope with the circumstances that we have. I'm sure we can, as CFO, we have done some analysis on the workload of our employees and whether we're saving any money by not filling this position, because we will find that then we need extra help from outside just to complete. For HR now, we need to develop a strategy, but because we have a manager, we need to augment that service by getting a few consultant to finish up that work, because audit wants it finalized. But because of our capacity constraints, we have to do what we need to do to not get a finding on that. But it seems that we are trying to balance it, but it's tough. Our environment is tough, but we are committed. Our staff, I must be honest, they are doing so much work. We only have 3 different personnel in each province. So we are going, you will see our report. For the vast Eastern Cape, we have 1 legal officer. So when there is an emergency, the CEO, myself, we have to go down to the provinces and do the legal work for the legal officer, because there is so much work to do, so much. So I'm going to hand over for our Q2 report just before I take the time. And thank you very much.
Period of July to September 2017, and of course, as members would know, this is a period where implementation is right at its height, and we would have gone out of or having finalized the audit in July. It's also a period for us to start working on some of the action plans where that is needed to ensure that we get to the root causes or alleviate some of the issues that the Auditor General would have highlighted. And of course, this period also is where we have Women's Month specifically running, and therefore that's the time as well we get a lot of requests outside of the actual APP and the work that we are going to be dealing with. And so we'll just run through what we have attained. The requests that we had from the priorities that are identified in the NDP and the MTSF outcomes. So that is there. I'm not going to really get much into that, but just to highlight the work that we've been doing in the specific areas. For the area on economy and employment, we've got our employment equity hearings. We've been running our One Woman, One Hectare of Land, having engaged various engagements with Department of Rural Development. We have our own awareness campaigns that we are running on CSEM work. The gender barometer, of course, is a tool that we utilize to see how gender mainstreaming is happening by looking into specific departments. And when it comes to area of improving education, innovation and training, that's where we house our advocates work, the legal and outreach clinics that we have in the provinces, our radio programs that are targeting community radio stations, the policy briefs, of course, that we have that come out of the research report that we have tabled in this parliament, as a hope that some of the issues that we have highlighted, recommendations and findings will be taken forward by the various departments as well as private sector that we engage with when we do the work. We've been doing quite a number of training on sexual harassment, especially within the private sector, and this is born out of the work that we have been doing from the research report that we had on mining, but as well we've also seen other chapter 9s also looking up to us in terms of us assisting them whenever there are these issues of sexual harassment within those institutions. So that's really what we've been doing as far as that work is concerned. Social protection, obviously we've had the victims charter, we've got all the other processes, complaints handling, the cost monitoring that we have in engagements with various magistrates commissions on the basis of some of the issues that we are highlighting or that are coming up in terms of the work that we do. Building safer communities, engagements with various men's forums have happened in this quarter. Obviously the investigations as well will follow under that, and the various gender-based violence work that we've been doing, the report, the engagements, the LGBTI sector and the like. Promoting accountability and fighting corruption. We've been engaged in issues around search for jobs in the Eastern Cape, specifically compliance reports on our international and regional instruments. You know, some of the submissions and the work that we have been doing in trying to ensure that there are specific legislative changes that are there in the country, our sex workers' reports and all that. Transforming society and uniting the country, assessment of women's representation and participation in traditional sector, the submissions as well that we have been making and engaging on. And as well, regional and international instruments would also follow under that particular work. And so it goes, I think even with SONA, it kind of repeats a similar thing, so I will not get into that. When you look into the work that we have done for this particular quarter, we are sitting at 73.3 against the targets that have been planned. And this gives us comfort as an institution in at least knowing that we are right halfway through the financial year, and this helps us to know that we will be able to meet the targets and achieve everything that has been done. And of course, if you look at how we have been doing, because we kind of always go back and check, there is continuous improvement as far as the work is concerned. If you look at where we were in the last financial year, and now there is a steady improvement in terms of reaching the targets. In the what we are doing or how we are doing against the actual APP. So it will be the APP, and then it will be those particular tables that give us a quarter on quarter what we have been doing. In looking into that, you will see that there have been a continuous improvement. We try and highlight the things that have not been achieved, the things that are achieved. We had 9 targets, for instance, for strategic objective 1. There were 2 that we could not meet. We had 14 for strategic objective 2. There were 3 that we could not meet. And for strategic objective 3, we had 5 and we did 2. We couldn't attain 2. And for strategic objective, the inward looking strategic objectives, we had 17 and we could not do 5. And so that gives us a picture of, a full picture of 73.3%. This quarter, the Commission still yielded value from the well-functioning structures and partnerships that we've put in place. And this has assisted us in always being able to have our reach. The chairperson indicated earlier that one of the things that have always been dire with us has been the budget, but however, we have been able to try and be more economic and be more strategic and come up with strategic partnerships on the ground that assist us in terms of ensuring that we are able to still maximize our reach, even though we could not have a bloated structure that we would want to see, for instance. And for Women's Month, we've still had those various radio slots that we have acquired through GCIS. And the strategy is for us to really engage more with GCIS so that we ensure that we increase our local reach. And this GCIS partnership even seems to be much, you know, working much more than the national community of the radio forum that we started with when we were doing this work on community radio programs. As well, we have that we still have a standing relationship with the SABC Foundation, where we are able to work with NEMISA, and NEMISA assists us in coming up with PSAs. They use their students there, and they come up with the PSAs that we are then able to impart particular information or messaging on gender equality. And in this Women's Month, we were looking at targeting women and young girls. And we also obviously have to highlight our mandate and the work that we do and the like. So we were able to still have those flighted throughout the SABC station for free. And at the end, for accounting purposes, we are expected to highlight and get them to give us a sense of how much that free airtime cost. And for this particular quarter, we are sitting at 859, about close to $1 million, and this is the process that goes on every quarter on quarter. Strategic partnerships and some of the possible funders. We have engaged with the Danish Embassy, and the Danish Embassy was also very interested in our community radio program. And because we are at this stage, obviously, reporting for the second quarter, at that point, we are still trying to finalize a few things, but as the committee will hear in this coming third quarter, that particular process was done and we were able to get a little bit of money, and we will talk about it a little bit more when we report specifically for third quarter reporting. We've been trying to also have, you know, strategic relationships in areas where we have problems with. I think when you look at area around, you know, education, basic education, we've had quite a number of issues. We have quite a number of issues in the country, whether it's about teachers and all the other things. And when we were presented an opportunity to engage on their pedagogy that they are putting together, the teachers' curriculum, to ensure that it's properly gender mainstreamed, we then jump into that. And for this quarter, we are still able to have further engagements. is a pilot that they are currently doing with three countries, South Africa, Rwanda, and Zambia. And we are able to then look into all the chapters and ensure that they are properly gender mainstreamed. We also have strategic relationships with UNDP, working on SDGs. We have a program, as members will remember, that is targeting municipalities on SDGs. And they have their own program where they are also targeting legislation. So we are working very closely together, and they are now also interested in working very closely with us on gender transformation within the private sector, and we are looking into that. For this particular quarter as well, there was a particular PSA that we made input into where SABE was interested in highlighting alcohol abuse and gender-based violence during 16 days. So it was going to be flighted during 16 days, but a lot of work needed to be done in this particular second quarter before that could be launched within the 16 days period. And of course, I spoke to the SABC and the minister in terms of the work that we do. Intellectual instruments, African Commission on Human and People's Rights. We were granted an affiliation status in this particular quarter by the Commission, which actually assists us in order to ensure that we engage within the region and we are able to work together on some of these instruments with some of the like-minded institutions that are out there. The AGDI report, the members will be aware of that. UNECA has set up a meeting to engage on this particular report that we have put together. But unfortunately, for some reason, they send our invite or the invite in terms of talking to the report or defending the report to Women's Ministry, and that was never forwarded to us. Up until the very last minute, when Women's Ministry had then tried to also engage SEPSESE for SEPSESE to attend, and SEPSESE, knowing fully that we've been working on this report, they then phoned to check whether we are also going, and we were like, okay, we are not sure what you're talking about, and it was too late really, because when the director from SEPSESE actually contacted my office, it was on a Friday, and the meeting was supposed to be on a Monday, so we were not going to be able to do that and work. Key issues that have come up in terms of the work that we have been doing, because in this quarter we also concentrated on rural women, there are quite a number of issues that came up in terms of limited access to land and access to women. Women are still treated as children in some of the areas and all that, and predominantly we see that in KZN, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga and Limpopo. And women married under customary marriages still face problems with the deceased estate. So part of what we have been doing there to try and assist is always to speak to our widowhood project, but as well ensure that we call the master's office and all the other relevant people into some of the engagements that we have with the hope that we can have assistance. We've had quite a number of discussions, for instance, in the northwest with the Royal Bafokeng on issues of land inheritance as well. And it seems, you know, when it comes to this issue of land inheritance, in as much as we have those you know, traditional leaders, if you like, that are almost progressive, because that's what we've seen as we're doing the work specifically with Royal Bafokeng. But they still have these challenges because they were now facing an issue of how do we give our girl children land, and knowing that our girl children are going to then be married and then they are now going to dilute us, you know, those kind of issues. So we do see, you know, some of these things cropping up even in those areas where we thought there is sort of progressive when it comes to understanding of human rights and the girl child specifically. We are currently looking at about 18 cases does show that there is that particular problem that is still cropping up as far as the work is concerned. And of course, I've indicated that we've been trying to also engage and work with the Masters of High Court in some of the areas so that they are able to deal with some of the issues that we are dealing with. Of course, gender-based violence and femicide continues to violate women's rights negatively, as we all know. And of course, we are still trying to engage. We have seen that civil society has now come up with their own almost like shadow program to deal with this issue. They have invited us. We are still waiting for a particular date so that we can have a discussion and see what is it that they've put in there. They have taken that liberty, seeing that from the government side, still the same old story, which I'm not going to really get into because we have had these discussions in this committee before. We still see issues, matters relating to protection orders and domestic violence still cropping up and coming up. And we are currently overwhelmed by cases emanating from provinces relating to gender-based violence. And we can see as well, when you look at some of the complaints that we are doing, we've been handling in this quarter, that particular area has also sort of jumped up in this particular quarter. So that really sums up the issues and what we've been working on. I will just run through very, very quickly just to see strategic objective by strategic objective, just to highlight what the progress is. If you look at the strategic objective one, we have work that we are doing under legislative and policy enhancement. We've had five submissions that were drafted in this particular quarter. And part of what we've been working on was to have engagements with the South African Law Reform Commission, specifically on maternity benefits. And we did some work there. And as we have noted, there's also reports that are out that we are still also trying to work on some of the submissions. Once they have the deadlines, we will also be engaging specifically South African law reform on decriminalization, which is a position that we have highlighted before in terms of what we want to see happening there. Under the gender barometer, the committee will remember that we are engaging still with the mining. We have two mining houses that we are dealing with, Impala, and if you remember, in the first quarter we spoke about Xtrackers. And we have not been having a cooperation with Xtrackers. So what we have done is to push them and hand over to legal, for legal to then subpoena them and engage with them. And we are now looking at a Petra Diamonds instead, just from research specifically. So we had two, we had Impala and we had Xtrackers. Xtrackers was problematic, and because the legal department is having a process where they are pulling and subpoenaing all of the mining houses that we've dealt with, we've then handled them from that perspective, handed them to legal, and then from research perspective, now we are dealing with Petra Diamonds. When you look at the preliminary issues that are coming out there, there is issues that have been raised, prevalence of sexual harassment, a lack of formal processes in those areas to deal with that. And legal and research are now coming up with a strategy in terms of how we can engage and ensure that we deal with those particular matters. Our court monitoring, we finalized a report that has specific recommendations on equality courts, sexual offences, maintenance, and all those other courts. And we engaged on some of these issues with the relevant clusters in the first quarter. But of course, as you will see, and when you see, when I hand over to the chair, I would want her, when she does her conclusions, to also speak specifically on some of the issues that we've been dealing with under sexual offences and issues that are coming up. And we have some strategies that she would also highlight in terms of what we are now going to be doing, because we've been writing reports, we've been engaging all the relevant people, there's nothing that is coming, and we are now moving to the next level on some of these issues. Policy dialogues, we held 3 engagements with relevant stakeholders on our gender-based violence research report. And when you look at the report that we are working on, assessing plight of women in correctional services, in this particular quarter we're busy with field work and collecting information. Members will remember that in the first quarter we had that backwards and forwards with the correctional services where they were trying to tell us what to do, and we've had to then re-educate them in terms of what our mandate is in terms of the constitution. So that work now is moving ahead quite quickly. The gender transformation investigation report, we have done some questionnaires for the period. We've been having engagements. This time around we've also changed our approach, not just speaking directly to the, you know, the university admin as it were, but also ensuring that we speak to the stakeholders within the university so that we get a broader sense of exactly what is happening, engaging with SRCs and all the other, you know, relevant people that we could engage with, and that's what we did. So that at the time when they come and appear before us in the third quarter, we have much more information other than just the information that they, as admin or as management of universities, give to us. Assessment of women's representation and participation in the traditional sector, despite some of the obstacles, of course, that we have highlighted previously, you know, the getting the houses to be running and being able to engage with the new leaders that are in the houses, we are now on course in terms of that particular work. Strategic objective 3, we have specific complaints that are there, and we have been able to exceed the number that we have set for ourselves for the quarter, and those are just indications in terms of how we are doing. One of the things that I know that the committee was looking into is the fact that at some point we were opening more but closing less, but as the committee can see, we are striving to ensure that each and every matter that we receive receives attention, and we work on it in order to follow through. We still have those systemic investigations that we are dealing with, transformation of the judiciary. Remember, we have put out a report, but there were specific recommendations and issues. We've been trying to engage with various ministries. We engaged with presidency, and presidency then wrote to say the specific ministers, justice and women, have been given the mandate to be the ones that engage with us. Justice now has come to a party, and we will report accordingly in terms of how things have been working out as far as that is concerned. Decriminalization of sex work, we have a draft submission that we have put in place. Of course, we have not changed our position. We are supporting decriminalization, and we have a specific report that we're dealing with that has just been signed off and finalized now in the third quarter, that looks into abuses by police on sex workers, and that has been now finalized and signed off. The maternal investigation is also still carrying on. If members could remember, we were still waiting to get consent forms to ensure that we are able to get into some of these records to look into this issue of forced sterilization and all that. The Department of Health was very welcoming, because we had our own preliminary reports that showed that there is this issue of forced sterilization in various health centers. And they have now put a team together that will work with us directly. And what we have been waiting for a while was just to have the consent of the people. And at this stage, we have 20 names, and there have been meetings set up in order for us to then continue with the work that needs to be done. Mining, we've had some consultative meetings for this first quarter, and we have had been going to Mpumalanga, Glencore. We've been able to assist them with some of their policies, but also taking them through issues around sexual harassment, because as we have highlighted, it's coming out very strongly that the mining houses are not able to deal with this particular work. And so strategic objective, two legal clinics and the outreach clinics that we run, we have been able to run quite a number. Just to give, we had 58 for this particular quarter, and that's the spread in terms of how we have done across the provinces in some of these legal clinics. We have highlighted, I think, radio slots and the work that we have been doing on the ground, so I'm not going to get into that. The work that we did for public education and information in terms of workshops and the like, I just tried to give you a picture in terms of how we are doing. The graph on the first is what we did in quarter one, and then the next one on your right-hand side would be what we have done in this, and we have really had much more in terms of the work that we have done and the people that we have been able to reach in our workshops and community engagements that we have had. And because members are always interested, I'm not going to go through this because it was actually quite difficult to even put in the slides. I know that members are always interested to see those provinces, the spread, which areas, which district, urban, and what have you. So that information is there. I am not going to even get into it. Strategic objective three, of course, it's where we are looking at our compliance on regional and international instruments, and on the protocol that we are dealing with. We have had some engagements in the Eastern Cape in an endeavor to try and get further information so that we can be in a position to write our report. I've highlighted our issues with UNECA. I'm not going to get into that. And we have a summary just in terms of coverage, because we have also resorted to utilizing our communications tools as well, in order to ensure that we have some conversations and some engagements on the ground on some of the issues. And I've put some graphs there just to give members a sense. I'm not going to get into this table. The table was given. What is there is, if I click on it, will open this table on the APP. And it's always important for us to give this table, because it gives a sense one for one in terms of the targets that we had, the variances that we had, and the reasons in terms of some of the variances, where we have variances. So I'm not going to get into that. And so the highlights in terms of the work that was done is for us to ensure that we engage and get people to comply when it comes to some of the gender prescripts and gender mainstreaming. We have had invitations from various sectors, actually, that request training, which actually shows us that as much as maybe we may not see, you know, the change as fast as we would want to, that there are, you know, people out there that are willing to put correct policies and ensure that they comply. Of course, our community radio stations, when it looks to the kind of reach that we are looking for, I think that is an important matter. We also, there's a case that we intervened on a maintenance case, and we were able to get an amount awarded for a complainant that had experienced like 12 months delays on some of these issues, and we were able, as we got in immediately, to utilize our powers and be able to assist in some of those. And these are the kinds of things that we also engage the Department of Justice to say we do not need to have a watchdog body coming in to get involved on some of these things, because we do highlight some of the problems that we see, when we engage with them on our yearly, our annual monitoring report on all the various costs that we dig into. We also have been engaging with some of the surviving spouses in terms of ensuring that they get access to pension. And of course, what takes the cup, and this is where I would want, Chair, for you to sort of get in, because we've been really having a high number of underage marriages cropping up again. Previously, I think when we were reporting and engaging, we used to highlight KZN and Mpumalanga, but now it's serious in the Eastern Cape. We are, of course, coming up with quite a number of strategies that we are putting in place. We've had to forget about our December holiday and find ourselves in the Eastern Cape during that period towards the 31st of December, having to look into some of the matters. So, Chair, if you could just quickly highlight, because I think there are quite a number of endemic issues that we are dealing with. And we will hopefully be able to give you even a more better report once we finalize the round one to check.
Mission Chair. The country has 91,000 underage marriages. By underage, we mean from 12 years to 16 years. That is underage marriages. We have also located the area that we were in December, even in last December, Ixopo to Umtata, Eastern Cape. So it's the border KZN with a border Eastern Cape, East London border. These children are abducted. The parents give them over to a granny who is in the town, in the village, and that when the child arrives there, the granny activates the abductors and they take the child and put her on some car or whatever, and they will take the child to another village. And this 14-year-old walked from Mvezo to back to her village, and the mother said, "Go back. I don't want you here." We have at the moment, when we intervened there, the police, and then we called the Hawks, and the Hawks are having the case. We have 9 people who have been charged at the moment, and I must say part, the majority of the 9 is the maternal side. It's the grandfather, the mother, the uncles from the mother's side, so it's about 4 of them are from the mother's side. The father of the mother is 31 years old. The husband to be is 27 years old. And the child was kept for 3 nights by this family of this 27-year-old man. They are dressed in makoti, and they were waiting for the, what is it, rape to happen, so that the cows can be sent to the mother, consummate the marriage. They were waiting for the child to consummate the marriage, and the child ran away to the parents. So I'm just trying to give you a sense of the urgency of this issue. The Hawks are having it. I must also finish it up, not to be long. This young man, upon this child running away, has gotten married to another. He abducted another. And so it is a network that we're dealing with here, and it is about poverty that we say, no, it's because of poverty they are doing this. These are young people. This 1-year-old is a young, I mean, she could have handed herself to this 27-year-old man, because Ben 10 is actually allowed. So we have found out that in that village, when we did the court order with the social workers, the child is out of the mother's care now. But I must be honest with you, when we took the child to the paternal grandmother, when the policeman arrived at the paternal grandmother, where the child, the court has taken 2 aunts from that side, were afraid of the policeman because they felt they had given their children, they are out of bed. So it is a community, yes, there's a conspiracy of taking these children as young as possible to, especially Easter holidays, December holidays, these men come through, they identify the village, they identify with the go-go here, and the abductors come through. So the Hawks are having that case, so we are monitoring that case. The last one, just because I don't want to be long, but I must, this is what makes us not to sleep. Raping of these young children, it's willy-nilly. Police are raping 14-year-olds, 12-year-olds, and our courts are releasing these men. It's statutory rape, but the men are out on bail. And they go back, bribe the child to stop the case, buy them clothes, the mother gets reluctant, the whole family now conspires against the case. But we are writing a letter now, because our act is clear, we need to write a legal notice of the police stations, the Hawks, and Port Elizabeth. We found some horrendous cases. So you can find the man who has committed murder, buried this woman in a shallow grave, takes the police to the shallow grave, and that man, as I'm speaking now, he's out on bail since last year. So I'm just trying to say that the case of GBV, I've highlighted here, it's overwhelming. We've raised it with this committee. We need a GBV council. We don't know whether that council will help to lift what we are reporting to the committee. Because at least with HIV and AIDS, remember when we had the council, we could reach out to so many people with the council, where the deputy president or somebody high up there can actually coordinate this. We are just raising it. You can't sleep. You can't sleep. And our legal officers, what the kinds of things that we hear and what is happening in the country, the power relations have worsened. Our women and our girl children are bearing the brunt of indignation. So we will be doing more work. We've been trying to meet with the Chief Justice, Mamame. It's been a year. We've been trying to meet with the Department of the Constitutional Development. It's been a year, but they have promised us in 2 weeks they will meet with us. But it seems as if there's something more that maybe as a committee, when we meet with police, you can raise what we are having in their committees. Maybe when there's a constitutional development committee, our women can be given, this committee can be given a space just for you to be able to raise. It's tough. It's tough for our women, it's tough for our girl children, and the police are trying to play a cultural role. They don't want to police it. And our courts, we are writing a practice notes very soon. For our courts, we are complaining. The judge, they tolerate talk like if you have been raped, if there was no grievously thing around where you were raped, then it's a mitigating factor. We're saying rape is rape, even if the person was not a virgin. With this underage girl, the parents' defense is that this child already has a boyfriend, therefore she must go to, in honor, go and so that we can trace who the father of these kids are. This area of underage children has a school where these 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds here in South Africa, they go to school, they wear makoti, change at school and wear a uniform, and after they have after school, they go to this small room, change into mothers and makotis, wives, and go back home. And that is what the school system is actually handling. And we are just compiling more cases around this area. It's a serious network. It's a serious network of trafficking. So So that's what the commissioners are ramping up to do. Western Cape, we have a case here. The maintenance court here doesn't have the enforcer. It says that it has budget constraints. Remember, if they are not, if they are capacity problems in the maintenance court, it means you and me looking for help. We must go and find the partner and bring the address of the partner, the pay slip of the partner, to the court to help the court. And what we have raised recently in the, there is a judgment. I think these are the substantive gender issues that we want to bring to this committee. If a woman is forced to go and look for a partner, the reason why you are not together is because there's something with that relationship. So it may mean that the woman was escaping from that partner, and now you're forced by the court because they don't have capacity. They are forcing you to go back to a partner, to force him to give you a payslip, even for school assets. The models in school, they are forcing our single parents to go back to the partner, find you, get the payslip, so that we can give you an exemption. These are gender substantive issues. These are the violations that the Gender Commission has ramped up to deal with. So I'm just trying to say that, also as part of our work, remember committee, honorable members, you said to us we must reach out to make sure that we have a race issue, we address the race issue. Let me raise our observation. The young white women, young youth, they are being exploited by these young men, white men. Because what the white man does, they absorb them in court. And remember, not all white women have a socio-economic condition that puts them at risk. So it means the vulnerable young youth, what they have to contend with, they have to fight with these young men for their children's maintenance and the housing, and things change for them. Then when the money is exhausted from using a private lawyer, that young man succeeds to run over the family of that young woman and take the child away. And one case we had in the Gender Commission, that young woman actually suffered a stroke because of the pressure. I'm just raising that our legal work is actually now reaching out to our colored areas, we're reaching out to young white women. I think that you remember the times when we had the gender machinery, and why we started the women's movement was that for us as women to speak broadly and also to address issues of race and banning of race. So I'm just trying to say that we are trying to address those issues as well. So our legal team has actually changed the complexion, although we all know that the burden is on Africans in particular, but we are also reaching out to our colored and white young women, and we are encouraging our political parties, where you can give us access, please give us a place so that we can have our legal clinics there. Thank you very much. I just wanted to emphasize that we are trying to make sure that we reach that. But I must say the other highlight issue that we are asking the committee, please, if you have any other way of reaching to the different other committees, the GBV violations, they are out of control. And our women's ministry, I don't think, even if we can call her here to say, address us, what you have you done, it needs more than her now. We need our committees to actually raise the issues with the different high people who come to them and raise those issues. It's out of control. And also, honorable guests, the Women's Ministry on the Women's Month, we were working 15 days of activism. We worked with them around the country, honorable members. So we are improving our relations with the Women's Ministry, and because it's important for us to do that. So we are doing it.
Unfortunately,
water crisis.
Chairperson, just to add to what our chairperson has been saying on the issue of gender-based violations. In particular, the area of intimate partner intimacy is quite a prominent feature of GBV. And it seems to be particularly prevalent in the Northern Cape. And in the past, Chairperson, we did a 12-month survey of intimate partner killings and established that within that 12-month period, no less than 14 partner killings took place. And we took the matter to the Premier and Sylvia Lucas, which is the highest political level in that province, for something to be done. It doesn't seem that much has been done in terms of our monitoring evaluation. In fact, it would appear that the position has exacerbated, has become worse. Even in this month that now ends, we see the report of boyfriend killing his girlfriend purely on grounds of jealousy. There is a mentality there on the part of men, which comes from kind of, I think, the racism of men, from culture, that makes them to think that if a woman doesn't do as they please, they are entitled to mete out punishment, which may even include killing them. There are some, if you look at the details of the 14 killings that took place within a 12-month period, there are horrendous details of how those women were made to meet their death. They are just not worth repeating in any context. So there is a need for a multi-pronged approach, even just focusing on that province, as a way of highlighting the issue nationally, so that this mind that a man is entitled to punish a woman for any difference should be completely eradicated in the country.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. This presentation basically covers the period from the beginning of April 2017 to the end of September 2017. That is our second quarter. Basically, we are here to account, as is required by the Constitution and the PFMA, our budget that has been allocated and appropriated through the Appropriation Act of 2017 will be covered herein. Contents, standard financial reports. In the beginning, just our budget, annual budget at length. We have a full allocation of 78 million and the spread of the 78 million is itemized. As is indicated, the bulk of which goes to compensation of employees. As we normally report, our work is basically dependent on human resources, and then we utilize personnel basically to effect our service delivery obligations. So our institution as well, the way we are structured, we've got 10 offices, and then therefore our budget basically will include the overheads, office running overheads. This is just a slide to indicate the further spread of the budget, strategic objective, What can be noted here again is that our office overheads consume, say, around 8 million, COE 54 million, and other specific activities in the EPP are costed as indicated there. We can also know that for this particular planning period, as we are doing the budget, we could only set aside around 500,000 for CAPEX, capital expenditure budget. And like any other institution, capital items of capital nature need to be replaced over time. However, we don't have resources to set aside to continuously replace assets like our vehicles with due to wear and tear, depreciates. So effectively, it has long-term implications. The absence of any money to replace assets would have future implications for funding. For the period, I think to maintain context as well, the expenditure financial performance indicated here are on a cumulative basis. So for the period, 6 months period up until the end of the second quarter, we have received all monies due and payable from National Treasury. 39 million has been received, which is effectively half of our annual allocated budget. Further to that, we have other income, mainly constituted of the donation that we are receiving in kind. The CUS indicated in the previous in a presentation to say that we have innovative means to smart partner with other stakeholders. SABC is one of the key ones. So they have made a contribution in kind to the tune of 2.3 million. And therefore, our overall income that has been used to run the CG operations in this period was 41.7 million compared to 36.3 million in the previous year. We can also take note of the fact that in the previous financial year, our budget was also reduced materially and restored in the current year. And then as we have discussed before, earlier today, it has now been reduced again. So we are basically having this bumpy period of underfunding. And the overall expenditure in this period came to 39.9 million, about 40 million, leaving a net surplus of 1.7 million. This surplus is attributable mainly to the vacancies, and mainly vacancies of the commissioner positions, which have been subsequently filled, and therefore on that basis we don't anticipate that the institution will be in a surplus generating mode into the future. And similar rendition, same information according to economic classifications, we can see that we have spent 40 million the above block, the top component of that block there is basically the actual expenditure according to our programs, and also classified vertically by column in terms of economic classification. So we can see that the budget for the 6 months was represented at the bottom. It came to 41.9 million compared to 40 million. So effectively, we have spent the money that has been set aside with only a net variance of 5%. And the variances are indicated per program. We are within the spending as planned, except for the commissioner program, and as alluded, that favorable spending variance arose as a result of the vacancies. Similarly, this is a graphical representation. The orange blocks represent the budget, and the blue the actual expenditure. We can see that the columns are are living the same height, so we are spending within budget. In summary, without repeating, the situation is that we have reported a net surplus, and then the bigger contributors to our expenditure, 27 million on COE, that is basically 68% of total cost, and then furthermore, we spent 12 million or 26% on goods and services, basically to finance the APP activities. And the red, the highlighted in red paragraph basically confirms that we have surplus reported, however the surplus is anticipated not to recur. From our own projections, we have worked out that there will indeed be spending within budget. There's not going to be, you know, a recurring surplus situation. And as well, I think we're stretching the rent. We are following guidelines on cost containment to an extent possible. And we are executing the APP successfully, as presented before. This is just to share further information on the deeper spending line items. Where we have flagged in red, it's basically areas where we are overspending in comparison, and then the green highlights indicate the areas of underspending. The overspending, as an example, on courier services can be explained by the fact that during the audit, in this period, that is when we have had audit, there was a need, a necessary need to support the AG to transport information in the main legal files, complaints files, for auditing at the office. So courier services has, as a result, spent beyond what we budgeted. Depreciation, we budgeted, our capital expenditure budget effectively was for 500,000. So in comparison, we are saying that our assets are estimated to be depreciating at about 1,980,000. However, what we have to replace them, it's only a financial value of 249,000. So it's indicated in there. The media outreach, higher percentage of spending in comparison to the annual budget, is explained by the fact that we have that expenditure, but that expenditure has been financed by SABC. The transaction has been recorded by creating a revenue line and creating a corresponding expenditure line. So it has been effectively funded for the SABC. And other green highlighted underspending areas, apart from being as a result of cost containment on areas such as travel, there are also seasonal effects. There are things that have been budgeted for in the annual budget, but which would be executed in following periods. An example would be like on report writing. The research work, field work has been done in earlier periods, and then the finalization and printing of those reports, which consumes the bulk of financial resources, occurs in the latter part of the financial year. So effectively, we are comfortable that we run our budget despite other difficulties within the plans, and that's the picture that we are painting in summary. Furthermore, on this other item, there's an annexure just to indicate the further spread according to the graph classification. That's the last line, which has been annexed to this presentation for further information. Stepping off from financial performance, this is our financial position. traditionally balance sheets. Our balance sheet, in total, we have 14.9 million total assets. Previously, we had 13.6 million at the same reporting time. The main contributors to this, to our assets, is cash, 9.9 million cash in the bank, and property, plant and equipment, mainly vehicles, computer equipment, office furniture and the like. And contrasting the assets that we have liabilities in total to 8.3 million. So effectively, we have more assets than we have liabilities. And the net difference is the 6.6 million. The last line, 6.5 million. So on the right, we have the ratios just to measure how healthy our balance sheet is. So current ratio is up in comparison to the same period last year. We have more cash cover on our liabilities. As you can see, we've got 9.9 million and we've got liabilities to the tune of 8.3 million. And because also we have total assets which are exceeding, that in itself means that we are solvent, we are a going concern. So far the picture with effort taken to financially manage the institution, ensuring that we don't exceed the budget, we are avoiding unauthorized expenditure, we implementing cost containment, we are basically healthy, but it takes an active management and oversight and accountability process, which we have systems created within the institution to do. And further, the last statement would be the cash flow statement, effectively indicating sources of cash and application of cash. So we have received cash from in the main national treasury, 39.1 million, with some interest there of around 240,000. And then we, of all that money, we have spent 33.9, almost 34 million, and then left from operating activities that left 5.4 million available in the bank. And we began the year with 4.5 million, the last row, the second but last row at the bottom. And then that is how we arrive at our cash that we are carrying at the point of reporting. Stepping off the financial information and budget, other areas that are regulated through PSMA and other treasury regulations, supply chain management. In this period, we have engaged in procurement of the following major transactions: wide area network through a competitive bidding process, our strategic plan, the current one will be getting to its final year in this current financial year, so there have been a need, there's a need basically to review or plan ahead in a long term. So we have consulting services solicited to ensure that we do a good job. And as well, we have insurance. Those are the bigger procurement transactions that have been entered into through competitive bidding. In addition, the procurement of other important items, like we have in the EPP, the voice over internet protocol, that is basically an enhancement of our IT infrastructure. We want to invest so that we can exploit the investment in IT infrastructure. So it's an improvement element of that particular long-term project. So So we have we are participating in this transversal contract, which will cover even further other telephone expenditure, such as cell phones. Accommodation still in progress, because we are not particularly happy at where our head office is located, because we are not happy with the maintenance of the existing building. We have proposed to DPW, or formally given instruction to procure alternative accommodation. So that process is still underway, and the next one would be the Cape Town office. There's a procurement process underway to also get alternative accommodation. So part of our assets includes fleet, and then it's fleet management that we actively manage. We're reporting to the committee that we are happy with how our fleet is utilized to execute CGE work, and then we do all the oversight, all review work around our fleet, so that there are no instances of abuse, or our cars are being taken good care of and then utilized for a purpose. And as well, generally, asset management is done properly in the CGE. It's part of what is subjected to audit, but as well, part of the asset management includes the disposal of assets. We, from the previously reported IT infrastructure replacement, we have been disposing of old computers. We have already donated personal computers to schools, institutions of learning. However, there are remaining structural big items such as old servers. Those are the remaining things that we want to dispose. We are in process of disposing those particular items, because they cannot even be donated, because technologically they are very old, very obsolete. So it will be like dumping unusable things on institutions instead of empowering them with their properly working. And furthermore, around our governance, as the PFMA requires under Section 38 and Section 54, the accounting officer has got their responsibilities and duties. So it goes to the responsibilities and duties of the executive authority. Basically, PFMA insists that there should be systems of risk management. We have those systems. We have committees running, quarterly committees. This committee is being chaired by an outside chairperson, and we ensure that there's accountability, and our accountability works across. So risk management is embedded within our operations. So in this quarter, that work has been undertaken. So it goes with audit. Just to say that part of the activities in this quarter was to finalize the audit with the Office of the Auditor General of South Africa, and that has been completed and reported to this committee previously. And as a result, emanating from the work by the AG, basically it's a management letter with recommendations. We have taken heed of those recommendations, and then we came up with action plans to address areas of weakness with a view to continuously improve. And our systems work, we account to commissioners, oversight committees, and we are glad to report that there's material progress in addressing those particular issues identified. This is just an annexure of our risk situation. I think in the main, on our risk picture has been drawn. In the main, the budget exposure, it's a red flag, but it's been attended to within the institution and communicated with everybody concerned. Lastly, just to report on other miscellaneous issues, the issue around the irregular expenditure. We still have got the old irregular expenditure for which we are awaiting Treasury to indicate what the decision is. We have made application, And the audit committee is also in support. I think having this being a protracted issue, the audit committee has also volunteered to help facilitate the discussions with the national treasurer. We are hoping that the intervention will bear fruit at the end. And furthermore, whenever there are guidelines, following guidelines, I think part of governance is that the consequence management needs to be introduced as part of the corrective actions, and that where such occurs, we have reported previously that we had an employee in finance who has been disciplined around financial misconduct. An example is an issue of not complying to national treasury, specific regulation on insurance. The regulation basically puts a ceiling on how much you can spend as premium on insurance in a financial year. And the employee basically gave information that they changed the portfolio and resulting in higher than we needed to have insurance cover on. And then we went through consequence management, held the person accountable. So we are reporting that we have reported in some detail previously, but as well, national treasury regulations require that where there are instances of financial misconduct, legislation and parliament needs to be informed. And therefore, in this presentation, we are basically stating the fact that there has been an instance of financial misconduct for which consequence management has been effected. And litigations, we don't have any exposure to litigation except the money that we are spending on legal fees, mainly to deal with disciplinary cases, internal disciplinary cases. So the impact of that, because we have had the referred case on financial misconduct, we have also a number of cases at labor court at the CCMA, but also labor relations, unfair labor practice, as is alleged. So those particular claims, by the nature of the cases, we resort to outside independent legal services. So, but this has been the expenditure in this period. I think the activities, disciplinary activities, were also heightened in this period. So we are hoping that as we are dispensing off with this matters, the spend will also disappear. And in summary, chapter 7, there is the presentation. Thank you.
Jayperson, and thank you very much to the team. I think it's always nice to have the Commission for Gender Equality with us, especially our first meeting. I actually want to start from the end and then start with some other comments. In terms of the financial mismanagement, which you just highlighted, pertaining to insurance and paying more than you should pay, you speak about consequence management. I just wanted to find out what was the consequence, or what consequences did this person face? Has this person been, let go or disciplined? What exactly are you referring to there? You spoke about legal fees and the legal fees pertaining to several CCMA cases and labour relations issues. Can you just give us a number in terms of how many cases you are dealing with there? And then I think I want to go back to some of the issues that I discussed last time. I think when I listened to this amalgamation story, which has really perturbed me a bit, it almost gives me the feeling as if there's a move or a drive to take some of the smaller Chapter 9 institutions and to lump them with the bigger ones, like your Human Rights Commission, which has got a track record and a history. And we spoke to you previously about your powers, and you indicated to us that you believe your powers are binding, but that some other institution didn't share those similar views with you. and you spoke to us then about seeking legal opinion in that regard. And I wanted to know whether you could give us feedback, whether you've received that legal opinion, because I'm wondering whether once you start tackling, because you see, we've spoken to you about this before, it's almost like, and I think it's because you guys are nice guys, and I'm not criticizing you for that, because you want to play by the rules, but it's almost like you sometimes feel inferior when it comes to other departments. It's almost like you have to, you know, and I'm wondering whether if you had tested your might, your teeth, through a legal process, whether it would be then less easy for decision makers here at Parliament to just want to throw you with the Human Rights Commission, once you showed them that you actually can stand on your own feet and be powerful and, you know, enforce your decisions and your recommendations, whether that thinking around this amalgamation would change. I would like to know whether you've received that legal opinion back. I also want to talk about the relationship with the Department of Women and the Presidency. And I find this very concerning that on slide 12, you talk about the report that was tabled. Yeah, the HDI. Yeah. You actually went through a process, you made a lot of effort, you spent resources, no doubt, on producing a report. And then I find it concerning, to say the least, that the woman in the presidency department then doesn't elect or doesn't discuss with you or doesn't engage with you about you presenting your own report, but elects Stats SA to go and engage on these issues. And I take it Stats SA wasn't, you know, they were not the right people to go there and talk to a report or talk to issues that they are not a favorite. So I want to understand how this miscommunication or this situation arises. Because, you know, also just at the end of last year, we engaged with the women of the Minister of Women in the Presidency, and she wasn't very complimentary about the work that you are doing. In fact, we had wanted to get to the bottom of why there's seemingly not really a good relationship between yourselves and that department. And some of the issues that, or some of the comments that you made, for example, was regarding your legal clinics. She, for example, said that they would invite you to something that they're doing, but then you don't pitch. And when we spoke about the legal clinics, she said, what legal clinics? She's never seen those. Those are some of the comments. So for me, I find both of your the Department of Women and Presidency has got little resources. The Commission for Gender Equality is doing very well with little resources. But somehow, we cannot have a situation where you've done the work, you've produced a report, and you're not able to engage on it or represent us on that. So for us, there's a real concern in terms of this relationship, which to me seems to be deteriorating. And in this day and age, when gender-based violence and issues around women are growing and not getting better, I don't think we can have a situation where we've got the two of you not really working together. So I wanted to speak about that. And then finally, on the commissioners, the last slide, well, there's some slides that we've spoken about, and I think we need to unpack this issue about commissioners that are not represented in all provinces, because I think, you know, it's taxing for one commissioner to be working, for example, in the Western Cape and the Northern Cape. You know, I've just been to the Northern Cape. It's a big province. We drive around there, and some towns like Sutherland, for example, women abuse and alcohol abuse, it's rife, and it's one small town, you know, so it's a lot for one commissioner then to be working in both provinces. I know you are stretched, and I know that the resources are limited, but I wanted to speak about some of the feedback, and we've spoken to you about this before. When we talk about commissioners, we cannot interact with all commissioners here. And I know some commissioners are part-time and some are full-time. But what we need to get a clearer picture on, in each of the provinces that the commissioners are assigned to, what are the specific issues that they flag in that province as the three main issues of concern? What is the commissioner doing about that? What is the commissioner envisaging that they'll do in the year ahead to address some of the issues? But we need more information than just saying three meetings, five meetings, and one conference and one workshop. We are really searching for the details and more of the information pertaining to what commissioners are doing, because, you know, in ministries, you know, people have got performance contracts, but we need more information. For example, there are some commissioners that I know very well because I see them on ETV speaking to issues, but then there are some commissioners who don't, you know, you don't see them participating as well on some of these issues. So, you know, what I'm trying to get to is, do you have a standard formula of what commissioners should be doing in each month or each quarter or each year, and also whether you can give us a, more of an indication going forward about exactly what commissioners are driving and doing in each of their provinces. And I think I'm going to leave it there for now. Thank you, Jefferson.
Well, thank you, Jefferson, for the opportunity, and let me thank the CGE for the presentation, Chair. And I just want to make this comment up front to say this committee has been raising the issue of the working relations between CGE and the Department of Women. And unfortunately, we are not receiving any joy from here, from them, from the Department of Women. And what we are trying, what we're trying to raise is that, you know, women issues are too much. They need all of us as different departments, you know, they need our collaboration, joint efforts to deal with the issues. So it's unfortunate, Chair, but we have agreed as the portfolio committee that we will meet both the CGE and the Department of Women so that we can craft a way forward in terms of their mandate or the working relations. And Chair, just want to check another point, Chair. I think we have continuously raised the issue of the reviewing of the National Council for Gender-Based Violence. You know, in all my debates in Parliament, my budget for debates, I've raised the matter, but it seems as if there's no political will in terms of reviewing that council. And you have been very clear that that, you know, council had powers because it was located in the Deputy President's office. So we knew exactly that you were going to make some inroads in terms of fighting gender-based violence. It's unfortunate because then we did not have enough budget in the previous, but unfortunately the minister then, former minister Lulu Pinwane, was so passionate about this work of the council. But unfortunately, as we're speaking now, I don't think we have a political will to make sure that we review this council. And Chair, I'm not quite sure, Chair of the CGE, in terms of what is the status present in terms of the gender machinery? Because to me, that you know, a gender machinery state. Because these issues that are emanating every day, we are supposed to deal with we are supposed to discuss them at that level, you know, so that we can be able to have one common understanding and how do we then approach and deal with the matters relating to women. But it seems as if also we have killed the gender missionary in this country. And I also want to check the, you know, at the level of the provinces, don't we have any structure that deals with, you know, the issues of gender-based violence at the provincial level? Because, you know, I'm saddened by the report that is given by Commissioner Ogot with regard to Northern Cape, that if then you as a commissioner report the matter to the Premier and you don't receive any joy, any positive response to the head, you know, the political head of the province, then where are we going? You know, where are we going? And in the public eye, it seems as if we are defending, we are protecting the women, but behind closed doors, we are doing nothing. So that's a problem to me, Chair. And I'm not quite sure how can we then approach, but I'm having confidence that the Hawks will then assist, because if we report the matter to the police are also the culprits, then where are we going as the country? We had confidence in the police services that they are going to assist us in terms of the security and safety of our own people, but if then those people are also, you know, being perpetrators of violence in different areas, I think this is a problem. But if the Hawks have intervened in such cases, I think this is a story worth to be spoken to. Chair, maybe just to get the, allow the CGE to give us a progress in terms of the maiden bazaar, what, yes, the maiden bazaar problem that happened in the Eastern Cape. How far are you in terms of the recommendations that you have brought forward to that municipality which was affected? And Chair, I'm also checking in terms of the cases in the Eastern Cape, whether do we have, you know, victim empowerment centers? Don't we have civil society organization that can speak to these matters? Do we have, you know, sometimes in the country we're talking about Tutuzela centers, wherein we can be able to accommodate these victims? I'm trying to check if these young girls are kidnapped and you come to the rescue, then after that, after you leave, what happened to these girls? Where are we accommodating them to? Because we can't take them back, we can't risk even taking back to their families. You know. So I'm trying to check whether we have those centers in the Eastern Cape. You know. So the other issue in terms of the finance, Chair, the 33 million, was it, is it still outstanding? Is it condoned? Or do we still have a challenge? Or still engage in the National Treasury with regard to the condonation? What is that? Is of the 33 million which was incurred in the previous year. And then there's a slide that talks to the lack of capacity in terms of the reviewer of the HR plan. I think it's in line, or oh, I'm not quite sure, page 9, surely. I'm not quite sure, maybe just to give me information with regard, because it's an old plan, the plan that is existing. So why is it a problem for you to review it? Because surely you still have capacity administratively, so you still have people who are working, and surely you've got a commissioner who's heading this committee dealing with HR. Okay, so why are you looking at me? So why is it, are you intimidating me? Why is it a problem? And even your supply chain management, I saw that you have outsourced the consultant. This means that you have money. Maybe you'll clarify it if I've not captured it well. So why are you using your own, you know, internal, I know that you have your own problems within, but why can't you use your own staff to deal with other issues, unlike outsourcing your service providers? And Commissioner Godwin, how far are we in terms of our engagement with your rural development and land reform with regard to 1 woman, 1 hectare? Are we winning the debate or not? Because, you know, the issue of land is still a challenge in the country. So are we winning the debate? What is the view of the Department of Rural Development with regard to this concept of 1 woman, 1 hectare? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a few questions, because in most cases my views correspond with those of my colleagues. Thank you. I just want to make sure that you hear me, because I have to leave shortly. Yeah. All right. So what I'm saying is that I'm not going to repeat what has been said. I applaud what has been said by my colleagues. But my own heart absolutely dropped into my shoes when I heard what you were saying, what's happening in the Eastern Cape with regard to the underage marriage, and that gross human rights violation, and that families are complicit in this. That is the worst. So we need to do something to change the minds of society so that they think about these things differently. But I want to know, you said this is a matter of poverty, and I know poverty is extreme. We've got the problem of no employment, etc., etc. But is it more than that? Is it just those cattle that they are wanting, which will help them, you know, for the compensation for the virginity that's been lost and all of that? Or is there some other thing? Obviously, there's power play amongst men, and just regarding women as possessions, they are chattels that can just be used and abused. And how can we deal with this? Are you able to communicate with the traditional leaders? Are you having cooperation with them? Because I think it's not only traditional leaders, but it's the way women bring up their children. Women need to be taught how girls must be given equal opportunities, etc. So if you bring up a son to have that respect for the mother and their family, then you will go forward. But when the families themselves are just indulging in this, it just makes me feel so helpless and so hopeless. I'd just like to know which area of the Eastern Cape you mentioned. You mentioned Mbezi, that the girl walked from there, but is there, you know, a wider area than just that? And I'm thrilled to hear that the Hawks are actually helping, because I've been engaged with a case just recently, a horrific one of somebody in Philippines, where the perpetrator is a policeman, but the woman who is the victim has actually been arrested. And it seems as though there's a conspiracy amongst the police to protect one another and not to do what they should be doing. So I'd also just like to know about social development. Do you have a good relationship with them? Is there cooperation there? Because I think to a large extent, social development deals with the practical sides of things, that we seem to be the ones just spending more time and attention on human rights. And the battle for land, we understand that. I grew up in the Transkei when I was a child, and it was a fertile area. I remember the peaches, the apricots, the vegetables, etc. That's a long time ago. But now, to a large extent, it's barren, because the people have left who have the know-how, they're looking for university, or they're looking for city life. So that's a tough one. But if we're going to give women the land, wonderful. But is it going to come with knowledge, with training, with water, with implements? Because just giving people land doesn't really help. Grace and I were both on a mission some years ago where we saw that land had been given to 21 disabled women who didn't have transport, who didn't have a tractor, who didn't have anything, and they had to go there by donkey cart. And I remember Minister Manuel, perhaps that's when I was still in the NCOP, Minister Manuel and the governor of the Reserve Bank at that stage saying we could do better. So are those measures being put into place? Because I think the one must go to the other. Thank you, I leave it at that for now.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think before we give the CGE to respond, let us have a break for lunch. Just for 15 minutes so that you can be able to get the 15 minutes break. I will take Honourable Gonzo then. We'll break for lunch.
Chair, mine is to appreciate what the CGE, your work the CGE is doing under extreme difficult situation. I'm saying this because at the beginning, when the chair chairs is the chair, the CEO was actually saying the introductory address, said something about the constraints that they're working under in as far as personnel and staff is concerned, where it mentioned that there are 12 commissioners, but they have got one PA, and that includes the chair as well, am I right? And which thing is really, really out of order, I'm not sure. I didn't hear what exactly is being done about that. Because I think something must be done. Another thing that I want to check is whether the CGE, when visiting these provinces, if they are having any sessions or meetings with the provincial relevant structures like the police and the traditional leaders, and to what extent is the involvement in those, and if there is, at the end of each meeting, what is the way forward? How do you really close your meeting and setting some kind of way forward? I would like to hear what is happening thereafter. Of course, Honorable Seke has mentioned that what next after you've been there. Another thing that I just wanted to raise is location of commissioners. You know, there is a mention about the concentration of commissioners, like Gauteng, there's X number of commissioners, and other provinces less in number. Who does that? The department?
You are to Kumbakone.
And who accepts that? Do we also endorse that?
Yes.
In Amokwetu?
Yes.
Oh, no. I think we need to look at that and do something about it, because it is really unacceptable. Maybe I'm asking these questions because I'm new in the game. You know, I only came here 7 years. But I was just wondering, we are saying this is happening and makes things difficult for us. Thank you, Chair. And then I think we should do something about it. How? I leave it to the Chair for a move on. Thank you.
Honorable members, let us give all of us 5 minutes to correct the thing, then we will continue. Thank you.
Janine. Yeah. You can borrow her, Janine. Is it working now?
Okay, I'll take that. Thank you.
Vegetarian.
You're not gonna say, I'll go.
Oh, we're sitting there. This is the plastic.
Excuse me.
Oh,
no.
Take a bottle.
You too. Okay. No, there are some similar features in the
UK.
I know in, which one? I think in the rural development in land reform. And rural development in land reform.
To the finance, I would like to have a question to the CFO, whether you have any plan with the public works to get another office building in the Eastern Cape, your office in East London, because during our oversight we have seen that that office was not in a good state, and also it was not even user friendly to persons with disabilities. There are no parking, enough space for parking, etc. What is your plan around this issue? And also, you said that as you are also dealing with the issues of gender-based violence in the higher education. What about the primary education? Because we had nowadays this issue of teachers who are having intimate relationship with the young girls, and now the people are coming out protesting to say that those teachers must be removed from school. And also I would like to raise the issue around the police, that as this particular committee we have engaged with the police department. What we have found out is that the police department is not doing what it's supposed to do on the issues of gender-based violence, because we even question them about what is happening on the police stations, whether do they have the victims, but we find out that the police have no clue exactly what to do about those issues. That is why you find that most of the victims, when they go to the police station, they even have the same issue that they are being raped by the police. And the issue of the court, I remember there's only one case that I know from in my constituency where a young lady has got a child, has taken a father of the child for maintenance. And because the father of the child is a taxi driver, and he's got a wife, so he said, no, I'm unable to maintain my child because the money that I receive from my taxi owner is at
can't able to maintain the other outside child. So the court said, no, you can give whatever money that you have. Mm-hmm. And the taxi driver said, no, I can pay 200 rand a month. Just because you got the child support grant, then you would add the 200 rand for in top of the amount that you got from the support grant. Is this able to be told, is this the right thing for the court to say to those people that whatever money that you have, you must maintain your child? That is why people don't even want to pay those maintainers. And yeah, and also the issue of the I'm also happy that you in this quarter you have not reported any irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We commend you to that, except the one that you alluded to, but to this quarter is none. But I want to hear from you what have you dealt with the matter of those senior management that have the allegations of fraud. Thank you very much. And the chairperson, I will also want to give you an opportunity to respond to the question that has been asked by the government. Thank you. Over to you, CJ.
Thank you,
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. What we will do, I'm going to ask the CEO. She has a child care issue, so she's going to leave us. And myself and the CFO, we will then handle the questions together with the commissioner.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll start right at the beginning. In terms of our powers, we have engaged an independent advocate that is looking into the matter. The opinion that he has put forward is indicative of the fact that we do have powers. Remember that the bone of contention in that particular meeting was whether the recommendations of all the Chapter 9s are binding, as was held in the EFF versus the public protector, that particular matter. Mm-hmm. We did get that particular legal opinion. And one of the things that we are trying to look into is whether we should just petition the Constitutional Court so that it's on paper from them in terms of that the opinion that we are putting on the table is actually the truthful one. Because quite a number of chapters, the public protector was agreeing with us that some of the chapter 9s, Human Rights Commission was agreeing that it's binding to everyone, so was CRL and everything else, and most of the chapter 9s, except the Deputy Speaker's office had an opinion that came from the state law advice that was saying something else, and that was the real issue. So we are on top of that particular matter. In terms of the AGDI, everybody was aware. I think as members will know, when we started with this particular process, we were able to also indicate how the process goes. And part of coming up with that report, we actually have a panel
And the panel was made up of key people from different ministries, DPME, State SA itself, Women's Ministry has a representative, that's civil society, so it's supposed to have that panel that then engages with the reporters as we go along. So the Women's Ministry was aware, and I think that's why even State SA checked with us, they didn't go, because they were very clear that it's your report, as much as we know what is happening, but we can't be the ones that engage with the experts on that. In our engagement with UNECA, the idea was they will find space for us to be able to engage, because what they normally do is to then take those country reports and come up with a regional report. So we are still hoping that we'll still have engagement for them as far as the work is concerned. I'm not even wanting to get into the issues of Women's Ministry. They said, we said, when they do their gender-based violence dialogues, we go on the ground and we run our teams in those processes. We had one in the Eastern Cape during 16 days. We were all there throughout that particular process. So it's going to be a bit of a difficult one, but you know, she knows, they know we have difficulties in terms of some of these engagements, but anyway, I suppose it's not for the chair to take forward. In terms of the maiden bursary, we have made a lot of progress in KZN. They have now changed their policies. So they now have a policy where all the scholarships are open to everyone. The only thing that we've been struggling with from our recommendations on that front was the engagement that we needed to have with SAUDA. Because the idea is, if we are able to hone, engage with SAUDA at that level, then it will assist us in terms of ensuring that the other municipalities do not fall into that particular. As it is, we've seen some, I think, newspaper clippings where in the Eastern Cape it seems like some of the people on the ground are sort of supporting it. It's not done yet, but you know. So our engagement with SAUDA would actually, you know, be of assistance in ensuring that we don't have to deal with a problem like that again, as far as the matter is concerned. In terms of where the girls are accommodated when they are rescued, we do work with DSD. Social development is the one that then has that mandate to ensure that the kids are taken to the safety places of safety. However, you know, in some instances, I think they do try and check the situation. Like, for instance, in the Eastern Cape, this specific matter that we went down for during 28-29 of December in the Eastern Cape, they had resorted to taking the child to the paternal grandparents. Even though when they then did a review, they had to then rearrange that particular process because the mother had then phoned the child to say, let's meet halfway, I want to see you and whatever, and then took the child back home. And then when they then land, they then took the child to the place of safety. And now the child is even now taken out of the Eastern Cape completely, because when she was at that place of safety, she was very unhappy. And she was even threatening suicide. But now she's now safe with the sister to the mother here in Gladstone. And we were part of, you know, the process when she was handed over to the sister and all that. So there's at least a happy ending as far as that. But we do work with them on some of these issues. It's their mandate to be able to do what needs to be done. Though I think, having worked very closely on this particular case, we do have, you know, some issues that we would want to take up and lift up in terms of these issues, whether it's from the police side, even from the Hawks, and all that, just to ensure that we going forward are able to deal with this matter much more better. Condonation, I think in the last slide that the CFO indicated,
We're still working on that. I think one of the things that he indicated during his presentation was that the audit committee is now trying to also weigh in and assist us and see whether we can get that going. Treasury, we've done everything that needed to be done in terms of submission of everything that they wanted, and we are still waiting. So the audit committee has indicated that they will actually try and assist us to ensure that we deal with that combination process. Lack of capacity for HR strategy. Look, we had an HR strategy, and there are a lot of loopholes, you know, that were there. And having one person that is just an expert, I mean, it's always important that you have somebody else that is able to input who knows HR processes. So we are not necessarily getting somebody new to come and assist us, but because we have this particular draft, we just tested to see, and we saw it won't be an expensive process to just get somebody from outside to come and review and ensure that it's tight enough in terms of some of the processes. Remember that we don't have, we have a junior employee there that is doing the work. We don't have an HR. We have put that position into moratorium because we can't afford. So that's just what we are doing. There is a document, but we need to ensure that that document is tight and is proper from HR expertise point of view. So we are not paying a lot of money. STM consultant, I take it that maybe you were talking about the process that we are doing now for our strategy. We don't have an STM consultant. However, what we have done now, because we are getting into a planning process for the next 5-year horizon, we need to come up with a new strategy altogether, because the current year is the last year for the previous strategic plan. And what we have done is to get outside people that are going to assist in terms of facilitation and all that, and have the write up. I don't think, it's important. Those are the processes that many institutions do, because otherwise we'll sit there and we'll write what we internally think is proper. So it's always better to have facilitation from outside. That ensures that they take into account some of the views. We are engaging with various stakeholders, and we are still hoping that we'll get a member as well that will come at a point when we have the next workshop on this particular process to have engagement. So we don't have a consultant in STM except specifically for that work. Honorable Robinson, I think, I hear you in terms of your heart dropping. That's exactly where we are as the commission on some of these issues. But we are hoping that one of the things, and I'll couple that with responding to Honorable Bengu, because one of the things that we are now resorting to do, instead of just looking specifically at national, we now want a way to ensure that when we zoom into a province and specific police station and all that, those people are problematic. Instead of trying to lift that to national, we are now going to subpoena the people on the ground. We will inform the minister up there, and that's what we are working towards specifically on some of the matters in PE, in Motherwell, some of the cases that we've come up with. We just want to see how that will go. Because we are hoping that if we do a shake-up actually down there, that there will be hopefully some change that we'll see on the ground, instead of forever trying to lift just to province or lift specifically to national. So we will deal with specific people on the ground that are deemed to have not done what they are supposed to be doing. And luckily for us, we've had various engagements at national level with all the clusters and everything, and we have proof. So nobody can fault us and say we did not alert the powers that be in terms of that. So we'll be going directly to the ground, and that's what we have just decided to do. In terms of the cases, I think there was a question around the number of cases that we have. We have the financial manager, we've parted ways in terms of that process. We had a very elongated disciplinary, as members would know. People have a right, and you know, procedure needs to be followed, a right to the tea on some of these disciplinary processes. And we had a fully fledged disciplinary process. And right at the end, when we were doing cross-examination from our side, he resigned in that particular forum of the disciplinary. So he resigned there and then, right in the crux of the case. I think he could see that it was probably not going to be good for him. So we have parted ways with him after that resignation in the disciplinary process. We've got some various matters that we have in the CCMA, some of, actually it's one person. There's one person that is running to court on everything else that we deal with, seems to not want to engage with us directly. And we have CCMA issues. We have, I think we had where he was looking at his KPAs, I think it was in the labor court, where he was alleging that his KPAs were changed without him being consulted and all that. So I will not, it's those kinds of matters that we were dealing with. We have one case where when one of our employees attended a particular mine, actually we spoke about the sexual harassment trainings that we did. When we attended there, you know, the mines are very specific when it comes to security issues, and when you come, they administer to check your alcohol level and all that, and one of our employees didn't pass. Suppose it was after a weekend, and it was on a Monday, but we are dealing with that particular matter, so that's another matter that we are dealing with, because we deem that to be something that brings the institution into disrepute and speaks a volume to some of our clients and things that we are trying to do on the ground. So yes, as much as we do a lot of work on the ground, we are also an employer, and we do you know, have to deal with some of those kind of behaviors and issues. I think I have tried, DMR. We have had engagements with them in terms of some of the work, and we were happy that they even invited us at some point, you know, trying to come up with some work specifically on. In actual fact, they started first by stealing our researcher and made that researcher somebody to look for their agenda work. So now they have our researcher that is now sitting there, that is a deputy at deputy director level, that is doing some of the work. So I think we will have more of the work. So we start on the ground and we uplift people, and people just come and take from us. That's how life works. And so we are still hoping that we'll have further engagements, because there are still a lot of work that we are still doing as far as that is concerned. I think that is all.
Thank you, Chair. I think the CEO dealt with a number of questions. The only remaining question would be the one on the Eastern Cape office. We have moved the office. Yes, indeed, the previous office was not conducive, as Honorable Member indicated. So we have since moved to a more accessible office. I don't have the address, but the move from the old office occurred around 2016 in August. So the problem has been resolved. That was the only remaining question with regards to, maybe the second question that I can respond to would be the one around the allegations of fraud against the senior management. Those allegations were investigated. independently by the audit committee, and then the investigations were also open to Auditor General. So the investigation has been finalized, and the outcome is that no senior manager whosoever was ever found guilty of the allegations. Allegations were dismissed as unfounded through that particular process. And Chair, I think that was one question that related to the finance area.
Commissioner Postolo, you wanted to say something on the commissioner's activities.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to relate to the question raised by the Honourable Member of Parliament, Member Panamera. And just using myself as an example, and I can reassure this committee that if you were to ask any of the complement of commissioners, what are the three things that they are actually doing, and in respect of those three things, what actions are being taken and stuff, they would, they are quite, I think, a capable group of commissioners who I think are on top of the issues. And these issues are very from province to province. Just using myself as an example, in the Northern Cape, one of the critical areas, firstly, is the area of GBV. And in particular, also this area of intimate partner cases. And in respect of that, we certainly make sure that in each case, the victim is actually supported, and that something is done about following the perpetrator, and monitor that, you know, to the yield. And also working very closely, as I mentioned earlier, with the Office of the Premier in this regard. And I think I mustn't be misinterpreted that when I'm saying that little is being achieved, that is in any way a reflection on the Premier. The Premier is a very dedicated person whose relationship with the Commission is quite strong. Work very closely with her. She creates opportunities, actually. I mean, the last time I was there was in December when she was doing a roadshow in the Springbok area. And we'll always make sure that I also participate in those platforms that she creates. And I think the little progress that is there is not really attributable to the leader, you know, lack of leadership. She's doing quite a lot. In fact, in her office, she's also appointed someone who's leading the moral regeneration movement, a pastor, who is a liaison officer between the Office of the Premier and all the, you know, the stakeholders. And she's doing quite a lot, I must say, and also create opportunities even for one to interact with the legislature as a whole, the meetings that I would attend in that regard. The second area is the area of gender mainstreaming. You spend quite a lot of time in that area, especially with government departments in the province, and in particular, the heads of departments, as for ensuring that they understand the importance of gender mainstreaming. And not only that, but that they implement it. And the particular area, for example, would be the gender focal persons, that they are not just token, you know, people who have a desk, you know, there that really does absolutely nothing, but that they actually, you know, mainstream gender equality in their departments. And the third area is the area of liaison with, you know, the political leaders, you know, in the province. And as I said, mentioned earlier, the legislature, the councillors, SALGA, and in particular, SALGA Women's Coalition. I work very closely, you know, with the SALGA Women's Coalition and pick up issues, and also we do some training as well for them, you know, so that they can do the oversight of gender mainstreaming, you know, by the officials, and see it where it's not happening. And so they also initiate the meetings to update those that in fact we initiated the meetings to adapt and on the state of gender equality, you know, in the province. And also fourthly, I mean, attend meetings of various fora, you know, on the status of gender equality. Fora like the men's forum, for example, the women's, you know, forum, the church leaders, you know, forums, and such like, you know, groups. And fifthly, in the land reform area, work quite closely with the Foundation for Human Rights, which in a sense is an agent of the Department of Justice that works to promote human rights and the protection of human rights, and working in particular with vulnerable groups like farm workers and farm workers. So I work very, very, very closely with those partner groups. So that's just to give you a flavor of the kind of work that we're doing. And I'm sure each of the commissioners would give you this sense of more or less what they are doing. And I think just to relate in this regard also to a very important point made by Honorable Emma Robinson about the importance of the enablement of people who have received land. I mean, this is quite a personal thing for me, because I spent 8 years as a land claims commissioner, and you, incidentally, were at one stage a member of the portfolio committee on land affairs. And one of my own personal regrets about that 8 year period, we're talking now about 1995 to 2003, which was a period of 8 years of involvement in a leadership position in land reform, was the fact that I think because we're driven politically to drive quantities, because the emphasis was always about how many claims have you settled this quarter, how many claims have you settled this 6 months, how many claims have you settled this year. I think overall we tended to ignore the qualitative side, which is about the enablement of the recipients of the land, so that they would be able to deal with the land productively, profitably, and sustainably. And this is one of the lessons with the benefit of hindsight one has come to appreciate, that it is important to integrate this in doing land reform. That it's not just about allocating the land to the persons, but also enabling them to deal with that land productively, etc. So, and this brings me to the question raised by Minister Commissioners again, which will be downgraded by the very honorable members again. The point about an update on one woman, one hectare, as regards the department. This is a bit of a conundrum, because the Department of Rural Development adopted the program, one household, one hectare. For whatever reason, I think the sense was that because we're going to be focusing on public land, which in most cases isn't in the hands of traditional leaders, that perhaps it would not be politically palatable for the program to be called one woman, one hectare. Hence, they are still driving it as one household, one hectare. But more than that, and of course our criticism is that the problem is that that program may get back to what has happened over the years, where in fact women, I mean, take the back seat. Whereas one woman, one hectare was trying to force the issue of prioritizing and also breaking the precarious relationship between women and land, and actually make sure that women are prioritized to have a strong relationship with land, not via the father or the male sibling or the husband or an uncle, you know, but that the land is registered directly in their name, irrespective of their marital status. But this is the route that they've taken, and I'm aware that a number of women's groups, of course, are sticking to the implementation of one woman, one land. They are not quite accepting one household, one land. And the third thing also is that even in the implementation of one household, one land, I couldn't believe that when I was asking these guys, so what is the target, for example, for this year? this was now 2017, they were saying that the target is 180 households. I said, but, and the minister, of course, announced 180 nationally, not even provincially. 180 nationally, but the minister announced that the program was allocated 100 million. Saying it is completely, you know, nonsensical to think that you can do 180 households and hope you are going to touch the mountain of landlessness that there is in this country. And that, in fact, in our advocacy work, we've been saying it is possible for this program to be implemented on a scale, for example, by way of even getting the PIC to allocate 1 billion for capital and land acquisition, and another billion for operational, you know, costs, as opposed to it supporting other more lucrative, you know, ventures. So that really is, and when we're saying that there are also other models, I mean, in Africa, for example, in Kenya, the 1 acre fund program that started with 8 farmers in 2006, by 2016 they had more than 245,000 farmers, also running a loan revolving fund on the capital, you know, side as well as on the operational side. So it's not as if we are short of any money. I think, just because of time, let me stop there. Sure.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think that honourable members, you got a flavour of what the commissioners are doing. I think what we need to do probably is to strengthen the way we report on the commissioner's work. So I know that Commissioner Muleko has some matrix that she's developing for us so that we can properly report on the commissioner's work. Because what we have just discussed also was that in 2012 it was about just addressing that the gender commission gets out of a certain place. And if we look at our commissioner's handbook, we had a section 6 that was developing our thematic discussions. But now what we have been doing is that commissioners have to start now in their expertise and right. But what we have seen also is that our commissioners don't necessarily have to be gender, flow with gender. So we need to augment and support each other. And at most times, sometimes when you have to write on gender and land, then a commissioner will say that I've been in local government. So although I'm a commissioner, I would need to be augmented if I had to talk about local government and gender. So that is the crisscrossing. And what we have been doing was that if you table a report in the commissioner's plenary as a commissioner, we then take that as a matter arising in the next plenary. What we did was that to change what the commissioners were saying in their report as actionable by the secretariat. So if you are raising GBV, the secretariat has to do a local, a clinic in a certain area because the commissioner has actually identified that area. On media work, all the commissioners go to media. But what the media houses also will sometimes insist, they want a particular person. So if they have worked you on land, they will say, no, please bring Commissioner Wallace because we want to discuss issues of land, women, and the enclaves. And as the commission, we don't really sanction and say, no, you can't say you don't want to speak to so-and-so, you can speak to so-and-so too. We are now using our language, the indigenous language. So if you go to Mhlobo Wenene, the commissioner must know Xhosa or Zulu. If you go to SAFM, it's English. We also go to Tobela, we go to all the Setswana languages. So our commissioners are really busy, they do the Tswana interviews in Tswana. Africans, all of us, we do different media work. So ENCA, it goes with a different audience. We target our audience. So
we know if we go to EMCA, this is the certain target. What is it that we want to raise at EMCA? And if we go to Mr. Mowenen, what is the target audience? What are we wanting to talk about? So we are always mindful of that. But our handbook is clear because we don't want to be accountable for what the commissioner has said out of lip. Our commissioner's handbook has clearly said it must be the chairperson, the spokesperson, and the CEO. But what we have been doing as the general commission over the years, even currently, on the economy, if we are strong economy and gender, and the question is going to be on the economy, we're going to ask the commissioner who's strong with the economy and gender, and then fill it up with more research. The other issue that I wanted to say, we also do some work on Africa. I know Commissioner Bata attended a reproductive health discussion. I must say there's also done substantive work on health and reproductive rights. It's also a big discussion. We'll bring it in the next, the right to abortion and whether our parents are backlashing at us for giving 12-year-olds abortion without parents and then saying to them, but you can't get married at 14. So it's like a cultural backlash against the women's rights discussion. I must say also Commissioner Mazibuko is on the albinism. She has raised that very well. If we have interviews on disability, albinism, Commissioner Mazibuko is very, we use her expertise already in albinism and then we just fuse it with gender and the dimensions of it. So it has helped a lot. We also have, so I'm not singling out commissioners, but all of us are doing it well. I was just giving an example. Men's dialogue, we have started, we are strong on that. Many of our commissioners do the training, actually, because the departments, after you have given them the recommendations, then they say, come join the commission and train us. So the commissioners do a lot of training. The women's ministry is a big, the women's ministry is a big question. And it's a big question that I think at some point we need to be in one room and sort out and understand each other's roles. Why I'm saying this, one thing, I know that Commissioner Wallace has something that makes him not to sleep, which is land. The GBV thing, we don't agree. The Gender Commission says the Gender Council raised the issue, we have a crisis. The minister has said on many times, there's no crisis, this is a challenge. You don't need a GBV council. And when she came in, this is for me a big ticket. And then two, the gender missionary, we don't agree with the minister. The minister doesn't see the role of the gender missionary. If you remember, we have tabled two reports. We have a gender missionary report, what is happening with the gender missionary, and we also have reports on what will help to elevate the status of women in provinces and what the gender focal persons are doing and what they actually have to be doing. We tabled that report. And the minister, when she came the first year, if you remember, there was a big the NGO's backlash with him on the GBV Council. She still has not reviewed that, even in her tenure, that question of the GBV Council still hanging. She said that she will review. To the gender focal persons and the gender missionary question, I can tell you, even if we work with the Premier's office, all the commissioners go to provincial gender missionary, there's no coordination with national or a structure that then makes sure, like we had previously, where we say, even when we come to the multi-party, we come together understanding, even if it's a DA, Ngata, wherever, Ngata, where you are, you understand what is happening with the gender missionary. If you remember, in the past, we used to know what each other is doing, irrespective of our political affiliation. We used to know. But this time, we don't have such an information. So our provinces, they apply this thing very, I will say to you, the gender missionary in Eastern Cape is housed under social development.
Mm-hmm.
In the Western Cape, there is no need. The Western Cape Premier has declared that it's human rights. It's under human rights. He doesn't see a need for it. And then in another province, it's the same. There's a different people, different groups, and it's not working for the country. So when the minister is saying that the national, we have given him the national gender framework for 2000, if you remember that document, she said, I see that document, you always make a noise about it. All I'm trying to say to you, that was not a plan, we need a plan, we're still waiting. So for me, those are two big discussions that the NGOs are up in arms about GBV, the gender commission, we agree with them, we can't locate it. The women's ministry is disagreeing. Gender missionary, we disagree. National gender framework, we disagree. So when a woman, a minister is having a stand, so we can move. So it's like, what do we have to do? Do we have to go to the ruling party, or do we have to go to a certain person to say, no, you know? So those are the two, even on amalgamation, it's a big item. But we can't discuss with the women's ministry. The women's ministry has a different view about the role of the gender commission. Very vocal, I think honorable member, you have raised it, very vocal about feeling that we're duplicating the women's ministry and there is no role for the gender commission. So for me, if we were having a big discussion that we needed to resolve as the women's ministry, was actually on the big question on the GBV, it was on the amalgamation, it was on the national gender missionary. Those are urgent, those are critical for women's movements. It's something that's even important for our children, the girls, the girl child, and the SDG, sustainable development goals, everything. And I can tell you now, it's going to be a struggle for the gender commission to go to New York. There's New York next month, March. We will have to dance around so that we can get some sizable of our commissioners to do this. We have reports to produce. We know what we want to do in New York, but the space is limited. So those are the big items that I think for me, Honorable Chair, at some point we will have to, it's something that we need to have on our program and talk about it openly and find a solution on it. But we're going to continue to commit. That one is a commitment from my side. We're going to work with the women's ministry. We went with them 15 days of activism. We didn't budget for the activities. But because the committee urged us to move closer to the women's ministry, when they invited us to their dialogues, women's dialogues, we took all our commissioners and the province office to go and work with the women's ministry. So we are going to commit to doing that, but there are bigger strategic gender rights, women's rights issues, and the status of women in the country that we need to talk about, and we are not doing it. The maiden bursary, let me say that the municipality has reversed that decision. But we have also said to the, we have asked them about the maidens that were benefiting from the bursary, where are they? And we have insisted that they always take care of them, because if they were, we wanted for them to understand that we are just saying the right to learn is universal. So whether you're a virgin girl or you're not a virgin girl, the municipality must not discriminate against your right to learn. So we have agreed that, and then they told us only three of the maidens came back for this financial year. And they have agreed with the recommendation. So it's a matter of training them, things that we are really not on our money, but the recommendations have been binding. But I must say, Honorable Speaker, that in the case again, the whole political body actually agreed with us. So maybe that's why it was easier for that municipality to do it. I remember one political party, the ruling party, actually made a statement when it was inaugurating their mayor
think that they, that has made our work more quicker. But I must say that the Eastern Cape, although there's no commitment to a maiden bursary, they are busy now starting a small discussion that we must award a maiden. Honourable members, this thing of maiden, it's patriarchal in this sense. They, these young women are actually identified for honorary marriages and higher lobola payments. So there's an exchange for you to remain a maiden according to the culture. And there is honor in a man who gets some of these girls to be married to. And if you have lied that you were, if the person who has married you finds out that you are actually not a maiden, your mother has to contribute a cow to address the fact that you actually what you sold to me really was secondhand. So there is an exchange to it. There is value attached to it. The mining houses, but we agree with culture. People have a right to their culture. The only fight we are having still with the maiden people is that they are taking children, 10-year-olds for this, and they are saying we have to break a child whilst they are still young, and we are saying please take care of the 16-year-olds up to 18 as per the constitution. Mining, we are having a meeting this week. We will update you when you come back. You recommended to us, honorable members, if you can remember, Chair, you said that we must go to a foundation. Remember, we were complaining about the mining. He has agreed he's sending his delegation to the CGE this week. So we will be tabling that report and we will update you. The NDP, ma'am, if we have to talk about the NDP, I will say to you the big ticket items. Keeping South Africa safe, we are the GBV. And you find that the country still has no strategy to, an adopted strategy to deal with the GBV. So in terms of our national development plan, 2030, we will still, if we don't have a plan, we are not going to achieve the safety. The participation of women in politics, we're raising it as a concern. Maybe because our gender machinery is not functioning the way it was. You know, our fight was that the ruling party fight was a PAC fight, it was a Ghana fight, it was a DA fight. So we always had a minimum platform to agree that we want women to be in politics. So it was not an ideological thing for putting women into leadership positions in politics. So we have to come back to that part where we are fighting for each other. So even if we are not in the ruling party or you are in an opposition party, but there must be a standard. Now, there's a big item also there. Remember the minister came, started the Ouija bill. So the Ouija bill in many ways was trying to enforce what we don't have. And I will tell you that the Gender Commission also put up a submission with IEC as I end on the Electoral Act to be amended. The ruling party disagreed. Yes. So I saw it in your multi-party discussion. Remember you had a multi-party discussion where IEC came to present that was our submission to IEC that if at the moment women depend on the patronage of that ruling party. So the ruling party has a 50-50. Now the opposition parties, what do we have? So what is it that we need to make sure that you're not fighting only for here, you're fighting for women here, fighting for women there, you're fighting for them. But maybe we should also account to ourselves how are we doing it. So that we, if you look at our report on political organizations and how they are dealing with women in leadership positions, we have submitted it to you.
you will see the different political parties, how they are doing. And that is part of our national agenda, which is another thing that we have not really achieved. So the main worry is, it doesn't have to show when the political party changes, the women must not be affected. So if Muliko's party comes in, she must come in with the same number of women, so that if I lose the seat, if I lose 50 seats of women, at least she can bring 50 seats of women in her win. So what we are seeing now is that if one political party loses, that has a policy on women, then this party that doesn't have a policy on women, then it drops the numbers in National Assembly, drops the numbers in local government, drops in the provinces, they drop. So I think that is one of the things that we have to contend with. It's a substantive issue, and I think that the multi-caucus can look at it, multi-party caucus, and just see that how do we make sure that we regain our gains as we as women. So it's a nice point to end it, Chair. I hope that I've dealt with these things. Maintenance court is a struggle, but we're going to submit a practice note. We have our advocates. And yes, the commissioners, let me count for you, Chair. 5 Gauteng, 3 in the Eastern Cape, full-time commissioner, and another 3 in another province. Which one? So there's two in Western Cape, full-time commissioners, 5 in Gauteng, and then 3 full-time commissioners in the Eastern Cape. So 10, myself, I'm part of the Gauteng people. Thank you so much.
Thank you, CJ. But only one question that is around the issue of the Eastern Cape offer.
The Eastern Cape office, we are disappointed to say that we have moved, we are now occupying a different premises. So it's now safer, accessible, it's away from that terminus road. So we have resolved the problem.
Okay. Yeah, Chairperson, I'm not going to be long, but you know, this issue about gender-based violence, while you are talking, I'm actually getting, I get anxiety about this, because you see, the problem is there's something fundamentally wrong about the way we are conducting discussions around this. Because last year, Karebo Mokoena died, and there was an outcry from Parliament. Everybody here paid tribute to her, and you know, we saw the Minister of Women and the Presidency at the funeral. We saw social development at the funeral. There's something very wrong that we come back to Parliament each year, all of us in this portfolio committee with you, and we are let down by people who simply, in my mind, doesn't seem to realize the crisis. Because just to say that gender-based, when we know the statistics are telling us gender-based violence in South Africa is worse than anywhere else in the world, and we know that 1 in 5 women are affected by it, and KPMG, for example, has done studies in terms of the cost to the economy, and that we are still sitting here saying that, for example, I don't think we should only single out the Department of Women and the Presidency, because yes, there's a lack of political will there, but the real crisis is with the Department of Social Development, where the funds are residing. And maybe I shouldn't just be speaking to you, but I think there's really something very wrong in our discussions when every year we come back to Parliament, and every year we bemoan the fact that there's nothing being done, and that there's no resources, and that there's no plan of action, and yet nothing happens. And I really think that somewhere along the line, we as a committee with the Commission for Gender Equality must come up with a plan on how we're going to tackle this. Because, you know, so are we just saying it's fine that there's no plan, that there's no plan of action, and that ministers are saying it's a problem and not a crisis? Because then we are failing ourselves and the other women who are affected by this. Because really, I don't know, you know, I feel sad that we talk about it, and while we're talking about it, lives are lost, and that we go to Parliament and we debate 16 days of activism. You see, my real problem here is, when we talk about 16 days of activism, it's almost like the Minister of Women and Presidency thinks that is the panacea to the problem. You know, it's almost like she looks forward to 16 days of activism, and then she rolls out a campaign, she spends the money on that. Money shouldn't be spent on that. Money should be spent on one, coming up with a plan, a concrete plan that draws together each sector of society into this plan. Because you see, the biggest problem now is everybody is doing their own thing. You guys are doing your own thing. Social development is doing their own thing. Women in the presidency is maybe doing something. And somehow it's not coming together. And I just feel that really somewhere we need to have a bigger conversation from a point of parliament and from the commission as to how we take this forward in terms of addressing it with the Minister of Women in the Presidency and Social Development. I don't even think the Minister of Social Development has got gender-based violence on her radar. I sit on that portfolio committee. We have never in the last year dealt with the issue of gender-based violence. We'll deal with SASA, and that's where it goes. That's where it begins, and that's where it ends, and that's where it stops. And yes, while grants are very important to people for their own livelihood, on the other end, people are dying because of this scourge. And somewhere, there needs to be a bigger discussion than just us coming here saying it's a problem. And I would really like you to apply your minds to that as much as I think we as a committee must put that on our agenda as one of the most. And Chairperson, I think, you know, to be very strategic, I think we as a portfolio committee must start the year by saying there's maybe two or three issues that we want to tackle successfully as a committee this year. And I think we need to put that as one of our issues. You know, I would ideally want us to leave here when the elections come around next year saying we've left behind a policy proposal in terms of a plan of action, you know, to save lives. You know, because at the end of the day, we can't just come here every time saying there's a problem. They say there's a problem. We say there's a problem. There's a minister that says, well, it's actually nothing. You know, we can deal with it. Because that doesn't reflect the reality of the crisis that we're dealing with. So I know it's just a comment, but I think we must all feel really sad in our hearts that is the status quo, that each time we come at the beginning of a year, and you know, after Karabi lost her life, many others did, there was just no media attention on it. And you know, it's sad that we highlight one case and then forget about the thousands of others who've lost their lives in the last 12 months. And I just wanted to highlight that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I remember that even last year we even talked about the summit, that we need to have a summit, but we didn't have a support as a portfolio committee. We propose that we must have a summit to discuss the issues of gender-based violence. But I don't know, but maybe it should be one of our first priorities to discuss these things for this year. Maybe the chairperson should assist us in making sure that he meets with the Speaker of Parliament so that we can be able to have a summit. It's either to meet also with the minister so that you can get the support also from you, the CGE, to have this support, because we know that even now there are people that are dying, but we don't talk about them. We don't talk about this because it's just happened last year. Everybody was talking about it. You know, I felt very embarrassed when we had to make the plans to have debates in Parliament. And the people, the other members would even said, no, you know, women portfolio community always talk about the gender-based violence, whereas we wanted other departments to be involved. You know, this only, we remember members that we only have to speak with the police and the social development. Not other members of parliament wanted to be involved in those debates. There's only going to be the three portfolio committees that wanted to debate on this issue. Just because everyone is saying it, no, we are sick and tired of you telling us that we must come and debate with the issues of women, gender-based violence. So I think from now on, this year should start with that, so that we can be able to say, as this portfolio committee, by the end of our term, we have been able to take on the issues of gender-based violence in this country. By having that summit, by discussing all those issues so that we can be able to move forward. Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Second.
Thank you.
thanks, Chair. Yeah, just to add on what you were saying, I think it was a sort of resolution of this committee last year.
Mm-hmm.
So taking into consideration that your integrated plan of action on violence against women and children should be reviewed this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the fifth year of it. So let's take advantage of that. And Chair, I think you should also fast track the issue that was raised by Honorable Lizel of the one of that legal opinion to check whether your recommendations are binding or not. Because we should not be tracked by the Department of Women and of Women. You know, I was telling them that on the other, you are a Chapter 9 institution. You must monitor them. You've got powers over them. So it should not be, you know, hide and seek. They should not play hide and seek. It should be shown. Well, in terms of finances, they're just, you know, passing that budget. Your budget is passed through their department. It's not to say you are accountable to them or vice versa. So I think you must be able to use the constitutional powers that you have in making sure that they account to you as is part of the Department of Women. Otherwise, we're going to lose all the gains that we have done for the past 23 years because of one person who's not interested in pushing the women's agenda. And in terms of the legislation, I'm not quite sure, Chair, because you're saying even the ruling party does not want to us to legislate, you know, your 50-50 women's representation.
Mm-hmm.
If I, on the IEC, or on the end.
The act itself, because the widget law is has been taken up sadly. But what we on our political report, you will see how we go up and down with women's representation. So we were asking a question with IEC how to make sure that women of all in all political parties they have the same ratio of coming through, rather than depending on the message of a president or an intervention by the gender desk or women's desk. So the IEC tabled the amendment here, and I remember the multi-party caucus for ANC, it was Mama Science and Technology,
yeah,
who raised it that they have discussed in their MEC that they do not agree. But I think for me it would be important to check where that amendment is and have that discussion. Oh, but we will also give you that amendment that we gave to IEC. But it is a point of discussion at the moment whether to amend or not. So we need to discuss about it.
Thank you very much. I don't think it will be a problem from, you know, other people individually. So they come and present issues specifically that have been taken somewhere in the formal structure of the party. I think she was out of order that time, I was part of that meeting. But I think politically, so we've got that legislation. So why can't we want to implement it governmentally? So, and South Africa is we have ratified the signatory to the SADC thing, and we have ratified your SADC protocol on gender, and which speaks to 50-50. So why can't we domesticate it as a country? So this is one thing that we have. I think you must test it, just to see if one is going to take it to court. Let's put it on the ground and test if it's going to be possible or not. Otherwise, we are going to just work behind the things. So thank you.
Now, and lastly, Jefferson, you know the issue of going to New York. We would want you to go to New York, so I don't, you know, if they're going to keep you from not being able to go or don't give you enough slots, it's another issue that must be taken up, because I was at New York once and there was 120 people from government there, and I remember the remark of the ambassador of South Africa saying he's never seen so many people in his life coming for one conference. And in fact, nobody, when this conference started in the morning till the evening, I didn't see people. I saw people shopping, yes. I couldn't shop because I don't have money. But anyway, the problem is we're supposed to go there for work. and not for other things. And I'm not speaking now, you know, about political parties. I'm talking, you know, the reality is you want to go and work. Slots shouldn't be taken up by people who want to go and see the city. So also, you know, in that instance, if they're going to keep you out of slots because there's animosity or, you know, then that is another serious issue that must be taken up, because we cannot have people not represent us who actually want to go and do serious work, and then other people are on aeroplanes to go and look at the sales.
The team who's supposed to go to New York was supposed to meet somewhere around December. Yeah, if you check your minutes of the last meeting with us and the Department of Women, they've said the team will meet somewhere around December, January, just to craft a way forward in terms of. She also promised that he's going to send a letter to Parliament, just for Parliament to send the delegation on behalf of Parliament. So I'm afraid, yeah.
I fully agree with you, because you know what's happened is that the department or the minister will send them, we send a letter to Parliament, and the members of Parliament are the last people that are being informed that they need a delegation that is needed. I remember last year there were only 4 members of Parliament which went to which I know, mostly were officials of the department. Even others were officials that were even employed maybe in 2 or 3 days before they go to New York. So that is why I'm saying that the number of members of parliament that went and represent a parliament to New York is limited. I don't know why. It's only those officials that are always in numbers. And I don't know, because the minister told us that by December they were supposed to have a meeting with all those people that are supposed to go. But what happened to the parliament? Because the parliament is one that is going to nominate those members that are supposed to go there. Because we know that the theme of this year is going to be the women in the rural areas. So now we don't have any information with regards to that. But so far, I think it's with Parliament what to do. Because now we don't have any information around the issue. Maybe we can make a follow-up with the minister to ask exactly what is happening at the moment.
Have we actually delivered reports, proper reports, to sitting here? Let's do retrospective analysis of our consciences. We're not talking. And that really. Is heavy for us. going to this association, I'm taking it direct to the president.
Can you also make any mention about this New York festival? Because you see, also for me, it's not only about the CGE, but it's about this portfolio in the community. You know, a representation of this committee last Wednesday, 5 years ago. No, you still have your 80 members, and I know, but the problem is it should be the committee also, and the CGE should have adequate representation. You can't have 120 members going from government. You cannot. And people are going to have you ever seen this education portfolio?
Huge, more than the one you put up.
Because at the end of the day, those are not the people who are accountable about the issues. It's us as a National Standing Portfolio Committee that deal with these issues. We scrutinize the reports, we get the feedback. Body looking after the interests of women, but now take second fiddle to people from, say for example, the PA of the Premier of the Free State, for example. No, it's not wrong.
It's not on to you, but not to the people who are dealing with that. You remember back when we went. You joined us later.
I was there with you.
Yeah, you were there. Yeah. The worst part of it all was when Mpana bailed. Because the wife wanted to go. Had to pay something. Yes. That's what happened.
We had a Commonwealth Women's Parliamentary Workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Remember, Honorable Toko Didibe is the chairperson in the African Nation.
Mm-hmm.
So we took a resolution that number one, we need to take the amount of amazing electoral act. So this is one of the things that you are going to push
mm-hmm.
here forward. Told a week before to New York. So that is why there were many problems with regards to the visas, with the passport, etc. Except to say that when we arrived there, there was a huge delegation of officials who were there. And when we attend the meeting, not all those officials will see them in the meeting. We were only four of us who attended those sessions, together with one lady from Parliament, who was the official of Parliament, Sis Joy, who was from the Multi-Party Women Caucus, who was also an official from Parliament. The others were not there, because we were told that if you want to have information, then we'll ask from those people. But at the same time, we didn't see those officials there. Except to say they were in hotels, they were doing shopping, they were doing whatever they wanted to do. But on
And the only thing that we have is just that when we arrived there, we didn't know exactly how are we going to participate with other countries, because we didn't have any reports from the country. There was no country reports, except to say when you are there in those meetings, in those sessions, that is where you come out to say, no, let me respond to the issues, because other countries are raising their issues in New York. That is where we come out to say, no, I remember talking with Honorable Chair when they were talking about the disabled women, you know. And I even came out to say, no, as South Africa, these are the issues of disabled women, whereas we didn't have any reports from the department to say these are the issues that we need to discuss with them. Except to say there were only sessions where South Africa was doing presentations, but thereafter they were only given 1 minute or 2 minutes to discuss. Thereafter there was nothing. So it's very important to for Chairperson to make sure that we will ask the, we'll follow up on the issue of this New York trip, and then so that we can know exactly what is going to happen this year. I think you should also write a letter. I agree with Honorable Secretary to the speaker. Because you will find that the minister will say, oh, I've sent a letter in November or October last year to the Speaker of Parliament. Then the Speaker doesn't do anything to that. So anyway, I think we have able to tackle everything, Honorable Chairperson. I think we have managed to take everything from the presentation. There are no any follow up questions on it. So no, I'm not here.
I can't believe it.